they're supposed to go. There's fear in their heart, but they can't let it show. They're underprepared, but that may be enough. The budget is large, but still, it's not enough. So may we start,
may we start.
Time to start.
May we start?
Hi, I'm John, and this is Yours, Mine, and Theirs. Please keep silent and hold your breath during the podcast. Breathing will not be tolerated during the podcast. Who's with me?
Hey, I'm Roy, and if Ava Cyborg asks if you will make her your lady, say no.
Oh, dang it. Okay, that's bad news for some of my awards. You snuck it in there. Okay, that's a bummer. Okay, who else?
I'm Ammon. I am a hitchhiker who's been a hop onto this podcast based on old friendships with these two characters here.
Yes.
That wasn't very good.
No, that's good. No. That's your best work. That's your best work.
Yeah.
Ammon, it's great to have you on officially. You joined us for the mythology thing, and I felt enlightened and fulfilled and aroused when you were on. It was really good. I was thinking about stories of us, like, all week, because it's so funny.
Aww.
Yeah, like, we used to live together in college, and we went to high school together, of course. Yeah, the place we moved into, I was just thinking about how much I disliked everyone else there.
We did get to become friends with Wyatt eventually.
Wyatt was okay.
Yeah.
Oso Wyatt.
Yeah, he's Oso Wyatt. But everybody else, in the whole complex, yeah. I didn't get along with them. They were like 25 years old and just really uncool and all that. And
our roommate lost a snake in our apartment.
The same
our other roommate was dealing drugs out of it.
Dealing drugs out of our apartment. But were they
a
worse
snake
than the
courier? Yeah.
Were they worse than John's roommate that, like, had the dildo collection and was the compulsive liar about being, like, the heir to the Charmin industry?
Right, whose Porsche got stolen the first day of class.
Yeah.
Well, then there was the guy
Hi,
who
Colin.
Different women would fight over in front of our apartment at 2 in the morning.
Oh, yeah. Was that
you remember that? I think that was after you moved out. No, that was – Nick was the guy who was dealing drugs. That was Lou.
Lou was the Brazilian guy, right?
No, that was Leo.
Leo was the... Oh, gosh, Lou. Okay. Leo played his music really loud, which is cool in Brazil, right? I mean...
Yeah.
The United States does not play loud music.
He just played a lot of loud music and lost his snake.
Yeah. He lost his snake.
That was an announcement, right? He came... Hey, you guys.
I think it was like... Yeah, it's like, hey, I have a snake. I hope that's okay. By the way, it's
lost. No. Good order of operations for announcements there. Yeah, thanks, Leo.
Yeah.
Okay.
So also, like, which one of them was it that, like, because this is BYU approved housing, so you would think this would be like pretty calm, but like one of them was it the guy with the snake who also like had his Playboys were being delivered to our apartment.
Yeah, and we were, like, afraid we were going to get kicked out because that would happen at BYU in those days.
Yeah.
So I would say one of the memories that stands out to the most to me, Ammon, is it's probably because trauma stands out the most, was when we, like, had an evening on the town in your dad's station wagon, and we came back to the apartment, and he was standing on the corner for what I assume was, like, 10 hours.
I had completely forgotten about that. How mad was he at us?
He was mad.
Yeah.
But your dad,
fun,
though.
Fun. Yeah.
Yeah, he can't. Your dad doesn't get mad. I wasn't there. I don't know what you guys are talking about.
He gets mad once every 2 years, so that must have been the quota for that.
Dang.
That's right. He needed to, like, get somewhere. He was like, I actually have somewhere I have to be, and you guys are just – and, like, you didn't ask me to borrow the car, which is fair, and, like, I guess
– Yeah.
At the time, I thought we were totally in the right, but in retrospect in retrospect, he probably was.
Yeah. Oh, he definitely was. Yeah, I'm sure. So.
Okay. Well, it was okay. You know what? Now that we're talking, maybe we did have a fun time that freshman year. Maybe it was fun.
We had fun.
Yeah.
We did. We watched a lot of great movies. We rented a TV so that we could watch Poison Ivy.
No, no, it was The Crush.
The Crush. You're right. It's The Crush.
Yeah.
You're right.
Same actress, different movie. But see, that's where, because Wyatt moved in later. When Leo and Nick got kicked out, Wyatt moved in. And while he was oh so quiet, he did get those. Remember, JR, you and I had the chance to buy the stolen speakers? And yeah, we were like, no, we shouldn't do that. But then Wyatt did.
Yeah, but Wyatt, we got a half. Hey, guys, look at these speakers some guy sold me.
They were really good speakers. Yeah.
Wyatt attended BYU because his parents gave him a convertible BMW if he would go to BYU. If I remember, that's the story.
That's correct, yeah.
Yeah. So also, with the Brazilian guy in the music, so having spent a year and a half in Brazil, like, that it's crazy because, like, on the cars down there, the speakers are on the outside because everyone in Brazil is, like, your teenage kid who thinks that everyone wants to listen to their music, right?
Yeah.
So, anyway... That was fun times. That was one crazy year.
Yeah, at a park. We watched a lot of good movies, and the year before at John's house, we watched a lot of good movies.
Yeah.
Our big difference, I think, is that I can't handle scary movies, which would always crack you guys up. I would still watch them with you guys, but like I would be traumatized.
I feel like we watched Labyrinth like 5 times.
That's still probably my favorite movie. I thought about including that for this, but I did not ultimately.
Well, you weren't allowed because we already watched it for this.
We already watched it.
Yeah.
Okay, anyway, we got plenty of time to reminisce, and we'll do that later. And there are a bunch of other things that I had to ask you about, and I'll get to that later. But let's talk your movies. Your theme kind of – and you didn't have to pick your own thing. You could have picked any 3 movies you wanted, but you decided, like, hey, let's do – Cinema Movies 2021. So these are all 2021 films that intrigued you because they were so long?
That is not was not my intent, although it worked out that way.
Uh-huh.
My thought was, so two of them were movies that I had already seen, the only movies I've seen in 2021 in the theater. The third I had wanted to see in the theater. I ultimately was not able to yet, although I still plan on doing it at some point.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, my thought was, you know, we used to go to movies a lot together. What are the movies that if we were hanging out in 2021, we would see together?
Nice. That's that's really cool that you thought of that way.
And, you know, maybe my tastes have gotten a little more pretentious than high school, although I think that was already pretty pretentious then.
Okay, well, yeah, I'm not going to agree with you immediately, but I will reluctantly agree with you, you know, and I'll show restraint as I reluctantly agree with you. But no, you've always been pretentious. I think there's no question about that. Okay, anyway, go on.
So should I tell... So this is now when I announce what the movies were?
Oh, yeah.
Sure.
Okay, so we watched... The three of us have just watched The New Dune.
Yeah.
The movie The Green Knight. And the movie Annette.
Now, did you see Annette in the theater?
I did. I saw Annette in the theater having no idea what it was about. Like, I went in completely
cold. I didn't know it was ever in the theater because it was like, I think it went to Amazon Prime, like, from day one.
Yeah, but there's got to be an indie theater in Salt Lake still. There was when I lived there. There still's got it. Like, or no, are there?
Yeah. No, there's a great indie theater. There's the Broadway, like, on.
Yeah, yeah. You
know? And then the Tower Theater, but I'm not. They, I don't know if they've. I think they just barely reopened. They wouldn't have been open again by the time Annette came out. But still, I mean, I wasn't like I was kind of looking forward to Annette because I saw a few months ago. I saw the Sparks Brothers documentary. That's actually a movie I saw in the theater. The Sparks Brothers documentary,
whoa,
which is really fascinating. It's you know, because it's done by Edgar Wright, and I don't know too much about the band Sparks, but pretty much the whole movie is, hey, these guys, they've been famous adjacent for 40 years, and they're just, like, still in the same state of popularity as they were when they started, and it's, like, pretty much they make an album, and they're like, well, the album didn't do as well as we thought it would, and so we fired our band, and then they made another album, and then they fired their band, and then they made another album, and they fired their band, and like that's the documentary, and they just go through 30 records, and it's like really funny. So I'm like, this is fascinating. I can't wait to see the movie they came up with, because also as part of the documentary, they like talk about their failed attempts to work with Tim Burton on a movie and work with like Jacques. Not Jacques Tati, but Jacques Demy, one of the other French guys who was supposed to make a movie with him in the 70s, and that didn't pan out. So anyway, so I was really fascinated.
This one is like another like he makes like Leos Carax, right? Like,
yeah.
He doesn't make, he's similarly, like, he's acclaimed, and he makes movies like every, like, rarely, because his movies are so precise, let's say.
Yeah.
So yeah, like, it's, and so the idea of those, that team working together kind of cracks me up, but.
Yeah, no, it's interesting. I think this is the first Leos Carax movie I've seen. I know Holy Motors was the big one, but I never saw it. So.
Yeah, I think that's true for me too. I just had heard of him because he's one of these like kind of legendary guys, even though he's like made like 5 movies. No, I'm sorry, 15 movies. But some of them are like video shorts of Carla Bruni, so there you go. I'm on the IMDb right now.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, so, okay, but you saw Annette, just blindly seeing Annette, and then...
Correct.
But I assume The Green Knight is one that you were sort of looking forward to.
Yeah, I mean, like, I have very mixed feelings about that director.
Okay, I was wondering. Okay, I'm just going to bring it up now because I was going to hijack you with this. I was going to ambush you with this because I wasn't sure if you took note of who the director is. But like one of the few times I ever like noticed you on Facebook, because you don't see a lot of movies, not like me, who just like I just you know veg out watching movies all the time. But like you made a post about a movie I remember really liking, and your post was, "I just saw the dumbest movie I've ever seen. It's called A Ghost Story."
You really liked A Ghost Story?
I remember liking it. I haven't seen it since. I saw it in the theater. Yeah,
I saw it. Yeah. So, oh no, I hated it. Yeah. So.
Okay, and so I was really curious about like, okay, I wonder if Ammon is aware that the same guy made this Green Knight movie. So I guess that's pretty fascinating. You know, maybe that's one of the signs of a. I don't know, maybe not a good director, but, you know, at least someone who's trying hard, if you could hate one and then, well, actually, you know what, I don't even know if you like The Green Knight, but...
Yeah, let's say that I might, though, but one... Okay, so a case where that's definitely true, the movie The Lobster...
Yeah.
By Janos, whatever the hell his name is.
Yeah.
I hate, which people, again, just like Ghost Story, people loved it. I hated The Lobster.
Yeah, but I like The Lobster, too. That's funny. Everybody I know who's seen The Lobster has hated it. Everyone I know.
But The Favorite is like was my favorite movie of that year. I thought it was amazing. So yeah, I am willing to give directors another chance, and I'm often glad that I did so.
All right.
But yeah, I was definitely excited to see A Green Knight, but also a little leery because I was worried about the director.
Okay, and my last question. Usually, by the way, usually we don't do this pre-interview thing, but this is really fun. You picked Dune sight unseen, but I guess you were pretty confident in liking Dune, or just because you know you were like familiar with the story.
I'm familiar with the story. I had thought about before I thought of this theme. An earlier iteration would have had us watching the 1984 Dune anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
So I thought rather than watch the 1984 Dune, which I did rewatch for this anyway.
Yep.
I think all three of us did. That's perfect.
Yeah. Good. So we can talk about it some. I'll just do the new Dune. And you know what? Even if it's not a good movie, I will enjoy talking about it with you guys.
Good. Okay.
Well, so when I sum up Dune, which I eventually will, the challenge will be, which one am I talking about?
That's not a challenge, though. I mean, I'll say it right now. I was going to save it for Dune, but I am, like, amazed. Okay, because I was telling everybody... You know what? The Villeneuve Dune won't be as good as the Lynch Dune. I was telling everybody that, you know, because it's going to do this thing where it's going to be so serious, and the Lynch Dune is just so fun, and I love the Lynch Dune, and, you know, it's actually going to weirdly age better than this new super serious Dune. But, like, if there's one thing that kind of amazed me about watching the new Dune and then the Lynch Dune and the new Dune again is you can tell that the director of the new Dune loves the Lynch Dune. Like, he loves it, you know? Which is, like, so, so cool. And you know, when I was watching the new Dune, I'm like, I can't wait to go home and watch the Lynch Dune, because I think they're great complements to each other in this weird way. Like, they both love each other. They're like, the new one isn't being like, okay, that old one is lame. It's not at all, which I think is just a weird kind of fascinating tone to take.
Would you say that the original, the 1984 Dune is a rollicking comedic romp?
It's
It's rollicking.
It's comedic. It's kind of rompy. We'll get there. We'll talk about the Lynch Dune, which I maintain is the best Lynch movie, but that's just me.
Really?
I like the Lynch Dune. I will disagree with that.
The thing is, Lynch, I think all his other... Okay, you know what? Eraserhead is better. I think because Eraserhead... And I wouldn't say I like it more than... I like the old Dune more than Eraserhead, but I respect Eraserhead so much because I think Eraserhead may be the most frightening movie I've ever seen because I'm just filled with dread. It just fills me completely with dread, and so I respect it for that reason. So I like that. As for most of other Lynch movies, and I'm, you know, a pretty... liberal guy when it comes to like movie watching, but most of his movies kind of just make me feel gross, you know.
Yeah, I think they're kind of, I mean, sometimes they're supposed to, but yeah. Even Mulholland Drive.
Yes, which actually, you know what? I haven't seen all of Mulholland Drive, but like Lost Highway, really gross.
Yeah, they're all
Blue Velvet. I feel disgusting.
I mean, yeah, you should. Frank is a horrifying person.
Yeah, yeah. And so, I mean, I know I'm supposed to, but I kind of don't have that same level of respect as I have with Eraserhead, because I'm like, you know, part of me is like, okay, you know what? I don't respect that you're trying to make me feel disgusted. Like, I don't respect that concept, you know? But the Dune makes me delighted. I'm delighted to watch Dune. So I think that's why I like Dune the best.
Fair enough.
Okay.
All right.
So let's talk about the movies. The first one that officially came out, I believe, is... Oh, okay, yeah. The Green Knight was actually released in July. So
yeah, that sounds right.
Green Knight is what we're supposed to talk about first. So, Ammon, you don't have to go into too much detail, but just sum up the Green Knight and then whatever else we want to talk about before awards, we can do that.
Okay, so the Green Knight is an adaptation-ish of the medieval story, which I'm sure we all know, Sir Gawain and the Green Knight.
I didn't know it. I'd never heard of it until this movie.
I had read it, but I forgot. All I remember is that someone's head comes off. That's all I remember.
Which is going to be crucial.
Yeah.
It's also probably more important for why people are excited to see it. It's directed by, what's his name, Damon... What is his name? Why am I blinking on his name?
It's Brock. It's
David. David Lowery.
David Lowery,
Not Brock. Okay, yeah. David Lowery.
Who's kind of a hot deal right now. And also done by A24, which is like the... why am I blinking on the name? A24 just made me blank on the name. What's the label? The not Sub Pop, like but the other label that... Well, the Chet Tapp was obsessed with that wasn't Sub Top.
4AD? Or no.
4AD.
Yeah.
It's like it's like the 4AD of film now, right?
Yeah.
Where people just look at their catalog and are excited. So, yeah. So those things I think are why I got more excited. But essentially, it's a medieval story done in a very sort of, I think, very true to medieval way, but at the same time, like it will depart from the stories in some ways, which we can talk about. But here's the brief synopsis, and we can expand it out as much as you guys want.
Yeah.
Gawain is the nephew of a guy who you might know named Arthur, King of England.
Not according to this movie. I don't think they say Arthur's name at all.
I think they do.
Do they?
Or maybe it's just
credits,
maybe
he's the king.
It's Arthur.
They never call him Arthur. Yeah. Do they?
Nope, he's just called the king, and Guinevere is just called queen. They definitely never say Guinevere.
Huh. But it's a round table.
it's a semicircular table.
Okay, so yeah, I guess they don't tell us, but...
It's not even about King Arthur. This isn't Camelot, I'm pretty sure.
No, that's right. Well, it starts... Okay, so actually, because the very thing it starts with is a weird guy on a throne and a weird... Which is telling the tale of Arthur, and then it says, but this is not that tale, and the guy's head starts on fire, right? Which was a great way to start the movie. But so a king who may or may not be Arthur has a nephew who is definitely named... whose name may or may not be Gawain... Because it's also Gawain, and as the king calls him, Garwain. So, Garwain. But anyway, he's a knight, and he's a younger knight, and he looks around at all these older knights who've had all these adventures. He's hanging out with them on Christmas, as you do, and they're and he's like, I've not had any adventures. Well, lo and behold, in strides this giant green knight with a giant green axe. And he's like, one of you guys has to challenge me. And the challenge is you hit me as hard as you can. Or they don't specify.
He doesn't even say that. He just says land a blow.
Yeah, land a blow on me, on my neck. And in a year's time, I will return the same blow to you, and then we will be friends, and I will give you the axe. And everyone's like, eh. And so the king, let's call him Arthur, gets out his sword, let's call Excalibur, and it's like, all right, if no one else will do it, I will. And then his nephew's like, you know what? This is my chance. I'm totally going to do this. He gets up, he chops the guy's head off. And the Green Knight picks up his head, and everyone goes, ooh, and he leaves.
So does that seem rash of Garwain? I'm going to call him Garwain.
Yeah.
Because, like, the game wasn't you chop off my head, I chop off yours. It's, it can be a nick, right?
Yeah. Well, it's, right? It's land the same blow. And so, okay, because there are two ways to look at this. It's like you can be safe by just nicking him because then he'll land the same blow and you only get nicked in the future. But if you kill him, he won't come back at all, right? And so that's the other way of being safe. And it's kind of, I feel like it was a youthful thing to do. You know, he really wanted to take his mark, yeah.
100%, right? And it's an important part of the story that, like, he hasn't had any, like, he has no, like, I'm sorry, we're cutting right into your summary here, but...
No, that's okay. We can go, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, but so, like, he doesn't have any, like, tales to brag about, nothing to speak of, because he's not, like, a horribly confident person, and he doesn't... Because, like, all the Arthurian legends are about legends, right? Like, Lancelot is a legend, and he does these heroic deeds, and Gawain hasn't... You know, he doesn't have any of these heroic deeds. His heroic deeds involve keeping... the ladies in the brothel company, right? So he's good at that. And so, like, this is his opportunity, and he's kind of been challenged by Arthur before the Green Knight comes in. So, like, you know, tell me your tales. And he says, well, you'll make your own tales, you know, that you'll find greatness. And so it feels like he way overdoes it.
Yeah.
Because when he chops the guy's head off, maybe you're right, John. Maybe he just hoped, well, he's dead. But if that's his hope, then that's also a really crappy thing to do, right? It's no longer a game when you behead your opponent. Yeah, that's cheating.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but then he has an entire year to regret that, well, maybe if I just, like, scratched his face or something. But anyway.
Does he seem regretful to you, though? Like, because I don't think I don't think he seems that regretful. Like, he just parties for another year, right?
Well, so do you think he intends to go, to go back and see the knight again? Because it feels like he kind of has to be shamed into doing it.
Yeah, I think he's just like, well, I did that thing, and now I'm like, and like again, he's like, but I don't want to follow up. But yeah, he gets shamed into it.
Well, and he's been reminded for a whole year, so I think that's kind of the most annoying year of his life. Well, like, oh, people should have been happy that I'm cutting off his head, but really they're just saying, oh, are you scared you're going to get your head cut off?
Yeah, he should have skipped all the Punch and Judy shows that, like, were constantly reminding him what was going to happen.
He's like, the media is against me. The media is not on my side.
Sorry, Emin.
No, that's okay. So yeah, so he goes on his quest. Like, he gets all fitted out, and his mother. So I'm just going to mention that in the medieval tale, his mother is this woman named Morgause. I'm probably completely butchering her name. But she's the half-sister of Arthur, and she has a full sister who's Arthur's other half-sister, who's Morgana Le Fay. And if you know anything about the Arthur stories, she's like the trickster character. She's like kind of Arthur's friend, kind of not. She's a sorceress. You know, whereas most of the Arthurian court is solidly Christian, she seems kind of pagan. Anyway, in this story, they've just made her Garwain's mother. So she gives him this, even though it looks like she might have been the person who sent the Green Knight, she also gives him this, like, girdle and is like, tie the sash around your waist and you can't be hurt. So this is how he's going to protect himself. And so he goes off.
Can I ask, okay, one thing I was really confused about is I don't understand his mom's motivation for, like, bringing the Green Knight, because she conjures the Green Knight to come.
Yeah,
like, so was that just for fun?
It's because her son's a layabout, and she needs to force greatness upon him.
Is that what you think it is?
Maybe, right? Like, she sees his potential, but he's not seizing his moment, and she's she's prepared this test for him that's going to involve him getting his head cut off.
Because that seems like a crappy test, right?
It's a pretty crappy test.
So,
yeah, she's putting, she's putting her son's life on the line there.
Well, in all fairness, she didn't know her son was going to go crazy and chop the guy's head off.
Yeah, and she didn't know her son would be the volunteer. She assumed, like her brother would. Maybe.
That's
maybe.
A good point. I hadn't thought of that. I think she's orchestrating it. But I think one of the questions at the end is, does he actually lose his head or not, which we can...
That's the worst question of all. So now she's trying to help him cheat, right? She gives him the girdle.
She orchestrates it and she helps him cheat, yeah.
Yeah, as long as he's wearing the girdle, he can't be harmed, right?
That's the claim. And then what does he do? So he goes off on his horse, and you see this beautiful shot with his horse's clomp, clomp, clomping his feet. He rides, he's well fitted out, it's going to be a nice 5-day ride. And this is the part, one of the first parts I don't understand. So he gets about a day out, and he runs into this, like, douchebag peasant.
Yes.
The forest urchin.
Yeah.
The forest. Is that what they call him?
That's what I call him.
Yeah, no, in my house we called him Dennis because I think we were reminded of the Dennis in Holy Grail.
Okay.
So Dennis is like, hey, give me some money. He's like, let's see what I got. Right. So he gives him something eventually. And then Dennis is like, oh, actually, we got a green church like just like over the hill. Which Garwain should be like, no, it's like a 4-day ride. But he's like, sweet, okay. So he goes where this Dennis guy tells him to go. And what do you know? He gets ambushed by Dennis and all his friends who steal all his stuff, including the girdle, including the axe. Oh, because he has to carry the green axe with him to get his head chopped off with. Yeah. And the Green Knight is like, here's the axe I'm going to use to kill you later. Bring it up with you.
Please bring it with you.
Yeah. And he does. So he loses the axe, he loses his girdle, and he loses the horse, and they tie him up.
He dies.
So, and that's the end of the movie. Right?
Yeah.
Can I ask, because like I feel like the last 2/3 of the movie are a dream. Possibly, I abandoned that theory, but like for a moment, I'm like, okay, so like he's dead, right? Because he's the worst escape artist ever. I feel like anyone can get out of ropes eventually. So it shows him dead, and then it like rewinds, and he's not dead.
Well, don't they show him like cutting off, using his sword to like?
Yeah, he does do that, but they show him as a skeleton in his bindings, and then like the camera goes back around the other way.
That's right, yeah.
From, boomerangs back around,
and
then he's alive again.
Okay, yeah. So that was another big question. By the way, we're gonna skip all our questions because you know I have so many questions about this movie. This movie is made to have questions. So I was kind of, my first thought was maybe that wasn't his skeleton, maybe that was another skeleton that Dennis and his friends like tied up there and the camera just panned around to it. And you're right, you're correct to laugh because because Katie said, no, you're wrong, that's not true, he was wearing the same clothes, that's him, that's definitely him. And so I guess the way I see it is he was projecting his own death if he didn't get out of the bonds.
And that's like, how I read it too.
Like if he was just the same layabout, you know, hanging out with, you know, in the cat house as he does, and he doesn't do anything with his life, then that would be his fate. And so this was like him, his first heroic act is to not die in the woods, you know, because he saw what he could become, something like that. Is that what it was?
Yeah.
So I think you're right, because a large part of this film is the theme of like the what if, right? Like crucial decisions, you know, what decision do you make and what comes of it. So, but I do notice in his before we have our Oxbow incident epiphany, right? When he's fleeing like Sir Robin, that the forest urchin doesn't recognize him because he crosses his path again, right?
Oh, yeah.
So, I don't know if that means anything, but...
That might mean something. So,
that's a good point.
I mean, it could very well be. That could be his death. That is the end of the movie, and it is a long Oxbow incident. But it's an Oxbow incident within an Oxbow incident, because there's a very deliberate Oxbow incident at the very end of the movie.
Yes, the Oxbowiest of all Oxbow incidents.
It was like Oxbow Inception, right?
Yep. So that's like when I said, wait a second, this movie still has a half an hour left. What's going on? But anyway, it's all resolved.
And why does he get, like, Because he has the girdle. Why doesn't he? And he's got a horse and a sword. Like, how do three urchins take him down? Like, that kind of, like, I mean, it fits in with his character, so I'm not complaining. But
so,
like,
I guess the girdle can be taken away from him, right? He just can't be hurt while he's got the girdle.
Yeah, so he should have just fought him.
I guess
he was still afraid to fight him, even though he's like a knight. He should have.
And he's got this giant axe.
But I mean, the girdle doesn't protect him from being tied up. I guess.
I don't think so.
Apparently not. So. Yeah. So he loses the girdle. He somehow gets out of the bonds or dies. Mm-hmm. But let's assume that he doesn't die.
Yeah.
Yeah. He then finds his way into this like weird old house. He crawls into a bed because the house seems abandoned. And oh, lo and behold, there's a woman there.
Right? The house is way better than Camelot, right? Like, it's way better.
Yeah, the Camelot was pretty gross, let's be honest. Yeah. The brothel looked nicer than Camelot, to be honest.
Camelot's it's like an STD with walls and floors.
Yes. But the house he goes to is like
lovely.
Dream home. It's like kind of, you know, it's like some kind of weird. It's like a holodeck house or something, you know. It's like,
well, except for one thing about it.
What's that?
That there's a corpse in it.
There is. So was the corpse always in the bed and he didn't notice it?
Yeah, I think so, but we don't know that right away, right? Yeah. So he gets in this bed, looks lovely, and then he wakes up and there's a woman like, "What are you doing in my bed?" And he like goes to touch her and she's like, "Hey, I thought you were a knight. What the hell are you doing touching me?" Because we turn out that she has been harmed in some way, in fact killed, because she refused to give up her virtue to these bandits, right?
Yeah.
And or a suitor or something. Anyway, he's got to go get her something from the lake or the well. And what is it? It's her head.
Okay, yeah, we're talking about this house. Sorry. Before I was talking about the other house that was weird.
Oh,
you're talking about the final castle.
Yeah, oh my gosh, this movie's so weird, you guys.
Okay, so Winifred, well, I'll get to this later, but so Winifred has some great lines, right? And one of her lines, because he says, I think he asks, what do I get in return? And she says, why would you ask that? Why would you ever ask that, right?
Yeah.
And I think several times in this movie, his knightliness is challenged, and this is one of those moments where it's like, you have no right to ask for something in return. That's not how a knight acts, right? This isn't.
Well, that's also when she says he touches her. She's like, "Don't do that, right?
Yeah.
You're supposed to be honorable." And then, it's not like he was doing; he just was trying to see if she was alive at all, but like that or a real person. But
it's crazy she calls out like his honor. Like he's doing this whole quest for his honor. And it's just these tiny little things that reveal what his real honor is. I think it's really, really cool.
And then also, so like when he runs into the forest urchin, right? Like he immediately is like, "I'm not a knight. A knight? Who? What are you talking about? Who's a knight?" Right?
Yeah.
So I think that there's a progression here, but like he's, I don't know if you can say he's being refined, but he's certainly being called out.
If my argument about the movie actually is that his mother is trying to disabuse him of the idea of being a knight.
Yeah.
But then show him that it's not worth it. But that's a longer, I think that, and I'm not 100% convinced because also his mother is just weird. So
right, she's weird. Right. I like that too. I'm going to talk more about that. Okay. Go ahead. We're almost done.
We're like an hour into a 2.5 hour movie. So then he goes on a long, he's now lost everything, right? Like, oh, and then there's this fox that probably is St. Winifred, right? Like,
okay, I was going to ask, right? The fox is Winifred, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I got that too, you guys.
Oh, and his axe is back. So the axe is back.
Hmm.
He follows the fox, and they go on this, they start to walk together, and they walk through these wild landscapes. There's this point where there's big giants, and he tries to get the giants to give him a ride, and they're like, no. Because they don't even notice him, right?
Yeah, the biggest, nakedest giants ever.
This is just so bizarre.
Does that mean anything, or is that just, are they just big giants?
I don't know. So did the giants come after the mushrooms? I wondered if the giants were real or a product of the mushrooms, but anyway, he didn't.
I think they were after it. I think you're right, because he's stuck in the rain and he eats those mushrooms.
According to my notes, I put food, brackets, gross wild mushrooms, vomit, WTF, naked giants. So
I choose to believe those giants are real, that they really are just 200-foot tall naked bald ladies.
Yeah, I think so. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway,
he just needed the mushrooms to notice them because they've been there the whole time.
So one of my unanswered questions was Fox Winifred, so I'm going to strike that. Anyway, keep going.
All right, so then they get to here's the two big dramatic moments in the story, right? They get to this castle. He gets to this castle up in the north, and like he's totally wasted this time. He's just done. But now he's at this castle, and this like nice lord takes him in. You're right, John. It's a much nicer castle than Camelot.
Yeah.
And the lord is like, he like speaks like this, and blah, 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 right? And the woman, the lady of the house, looks just like his love interest, the brothel lady, Essie. Essel.
What a great name, Essel.
It's a good name. And they're like super generous. They're like, no, the Green Chapel is just up the hill. It's fine. Stay here. We'll care for you. It's just us and this woman who has bandages around her eyes who you were never going to talk about. Like, she's just going to be around.
Don't mention the woman. She can hear us.
So the lord is like, I just hunt all the time. So here's what I'm going to do is whenever I go hunting, I'm going to give you whatever I hunt. And you need to give me whatever you acquire in my house. And the guy's like, well, it's your house. How can I acquire anything? Well, indeed. So the lady of the house is totally coming on to Garwain, like hardcore, right?
Yeah.
And he's like, I can't do that. But you can tell he totally wants to. And the last day she's like, come on. She like comes into his bedroom while he's naked. And he's like, why haven't you come? He's like, you know I want to. But then she's got another girdle.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And he's like, I need that girdle. And I don't know what our podcast is rated here, because the next part gets a little bit spicy. Nice.
Well, he expresses himself while trying to get the girdle from her.
Which she says, you're no knight.
You're no knight, right?
Yeah.
And is he no knight because he like gave in and tried to come onto the lady of the house? Or is he no knight because he didn't quite actually make it far enough along to come onto the lady in the house? We don't know. But either way,
neither is good.
And it's very clear that like him giving the taking the sash is like him prematurely doing his business, right? They're both signs of his weakness, his unwillingness to sort of do what needs to be done. But then he flees the house and he sees the lord. And the lord is like, who's been like catching him like giant game every day for his like trip home.
Yeah,
is like
he's been eating like 40 pounds of meat every single day.
it's really amazing. So anyway, so the lord is like, where are you going? He's like, I gotta get going. He's like, well, what about our game? He's like, don't even bring up your game to me. Well, he's like, but you've got to give me one thing because you got something from me. Now, of course, the thing that he should be giving is the sash. But the thing that the guy takes, he comes and he takes a very beautiful, sensual kiss from Gawain before Gawain leaves. And Gawain is just like undone by this, right? And apparently in the legend...
Yeah, the legend.
In the legend, Gawain refuses the advances of the woman and gives the man the kiss himself. So he's honest about that part.
Yeah.
And I guess there's some subtext that like there's a lot of ways in which Gawain is coded as a covertly gay character in the original story, some people claim. The girdle, for example, is another one. But that's not what they're doing here. They're doing something different here, right? So anyway, he doesn't give either the sash or the kiss, but the lord comes and takes the kiss. So he's like, look, I know what happened, and I'm not even mad about it. It's just that you're not honoring the deal.
Yeah.
It's sort of the sense that I got.
Okay, yeah.
Also, I like it when the lord reminds him to please wash your hands.
That's right.
So in the legend, because Gawain's about to go straight to the Green Chapel. In the legend, the Green Knight and the Lord of this house are the same person, correct?
Yes.
Did they intend for us to make that connection in this movie? Because I didn't get that connection in this movie at all.
I don't think so. I'm not taking it as canonical to the movie. That's where I am.
Right.
Okay.
I don't know about you guys.
That's good. I mean, But, you know, this is the kind of stuff that I need help with. I need to, like, find out what other people think. Because I think some people said that his mother was projecting the Lord and the Lady. And that's, like, one of the reasons why the Lady looks just like Essel is
because... I thought it was just because it's the same actress.
Well, but, you know, I'm just what I'm saying is, you know, the mom knows his type, right?
Yeah.
So in the legend, it's explicitly the case that Morgan Le Fay, who's not his mother but his aunt, but nonetheless, Morgan Le Fay is the blind woman in the castle.
Okay.
But she was not played by the same actress as Morgan Le Fay here. So I don't know if that's canonical or just suggested. But there is that weird vision, like when he wakes up in the bed, the first thing he sees is his mother, right before he sees the Lord and the Lady. So I think it's possible, but I didn't take it as like 100% given.
Okay.
What about you? But it sounds like you, Roy, agree with me, or?
I mean, I don't know. I don't really. I mean, there's more going. This is the second time I'd seen this movie, by the way, and I'm glad I saw it a second time. And we'll get there. But I don't know. I get that there's mysterious stuff going on with the mother, but I don't know exactly how far her powers extend. And I think, I think you're alluding to that they kind of, I mean, you have the old lady who's blindfolded, but his mother also is partially Morgan Le Fay, right?
So in this story, his mother just is Morgan Le Fay. Yes.
Is okay. So yeah. Who's the blind lady then? Is just kind of neat blind lady in the house, or
yeah,
is that the presence of his mother?
Disguise. Yeah.
Okay.
That's the question.
Okay, I can see that's his mother there. But anyway, let's get to hacking.
Yeah, it's okay. We're almost done. So he makes it to the Green Chapel. He has to cross a stream, and the fox. Remember, people have been saying to him, like, why are you doing this? You don't necessarily have to do this. And the fox is like, don't go. The fox says the thing which is really interesting. The fox says, he's wild like I am, but he doesn't know any restraint. And the fox says, I won't tell anybody if you don't. So the fox is basically saying, if you cross the river, you're not coming back, right? Yeah. But he's like, no, I'm going to do this. And he chases the fox away. And so he crosses, and there's the Green Knight in the chapel. The Green Knight is like still slumbering because he's a day early. And so he waits, and sure enough, the Green Knight wakes up. Then I think, JR, based on your comments online, you had the same reaction as me, which is like, okay, the movie's almost over. No. Then he's terrified.
Yeah.
And so he runs away. He's about to get the teeth up, and instead he runs away.
Bravely throws in the sponge.
Brave, Sir Gawain.
So he runs all the way back to Camelot. And, you know, it's fine. Like, nobody asks. Everyone's like, okay, you're back. It's fine. And he becomes the king. You know, Arthur eventually dies, and he becomes the king. And he has a child by Essel, and in, like, just the shittiest, like, boy, if you didn't hate him that before this, you do now. You watch her give birth, and as she's giving birth, Merlin, I assume, or his advisor comes and takes the child, and they throw a few coins at Essel, and then they all leave because, of course, she's a commoner. Yeah. And so, and then he goes and marries this, like, you know, like, 16-year-old, like, noblewoman instead.
I think it was... And just, she was the empress from Neverending Story, I think, is who he married.
Right? Moon Child!
Yeah.
But yeah, so he marries her, and, like, he's just not a very good king. Like, you watch him, like, his son dies in battle, he loses a bunch of things, and at the end of his life, like, all of Camelot is destroyed.
Like, people throw stuff at him.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
he's the king, hated. Right? Yeah. Like, he's no respect. Yeah.
So he takes off the sash, and his head falls off.
Yeah.
And that is about a 20-minute sequence. We've
just coincidence.
Yeah.
So then suddenly we're back at the chapel, and he says, you know what? I got to be honest here. And he pulls off the sash, and he says, now you can do it. And the Green Knight is clearly very proud of him, and he goes, good work. Now it's time for hacking, or what is it?
Now, no, off, now off with your head, I think.
This says now off with your head.
Yeah.
So, but he's got like this loving expression, like he's so proud of him. So I don't know what he means by that. Is he going to cut off his head, or is it...
I have no idea. Should we do a poll right here?
I don't think he cuts off his head.
I think he does cut off his head.
I think in the legend, he doesn't cut off his head. Mm-hmm. Yeah. He hits him, but it's like it doesn't actually kill him. And I think that's what happens here. I think that he... So in the legend, what happens is he doesn't reveal... So I find this... And sorry, I'm backing up. I find this fascinating. In the legend, he reveals the kiss, but not the sash. And I don't think he ever takes the sash off.
Yeah, I don't think
so
he
Green
loses
Knight,
it. Yeah.
The Green Knight hits him 3 times. And on the third hit, he gets like a big nick on his neck. And because the first time he flinches, so the Green Knight doesn't do it. And then the second time he gets nicked on his neck. And then the Green Knight like basically hits him, but he just doesn't lose his head. And he says, the reason you got a nick is because you didn't tell me about the sash. But in this one, he does tell him about the sash. So does that mean... Because the Green Knight at the very beginning says, if you come and take the hit, then when you come home, then I will send you home in honor. Right? And so I think that he hits him...
He says they'll part ways friends, right?
Yeah, which I guess you can part ways friends is dead. Mm-hmm. But I take it that he hits him and then miraculously it doesn't kill him, even though it's like a full hit.
It's definitely a full hit that we don't see. Because it can also be interpreted that the whole, he moves his thumb kind of in a sarcastic way across his neck. And like that's what it was that gesture, and then nothing happened after that gesture.
That's possible too.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, I thought for sure both of you would think that his head comes off, because I think his head definitely comes off. Because I think the whole point of the Green Knight is, and he is very proud of him, and he's very on, you know, and he has his honor, but. The Green Knight is just the inevitability, you know. It's just, you know what? You have your honor, but your head still comes off. I'm proud of you, but your head still comes off. And I think the whole and Ammon, like you were saying before about how his mom was kind of trying to steer him away from that whole, you know, knighthood and honor and all this, you know, all of, you know, this stuff that, you know, that's what he gets caught up in. And that's what, you know, he's like, okay, I'm gonna change my life. I'm gonna be an honorable knight, and I'm gonna do it by, you know, going on this quest, and people are gonna talk about me, and I'm gonna be legendary in that way. But I kind of think the point of the movie is, hey, that's all garbage. The whole pressure from society to do this great honorable thing, and you know what? Honor is kind of just, you know, at least this type of honor is, you know, where people talk about you, it's just kind of not important. It's certainly not as good as the honor, you know, that he gets called out for by Winifred. It's like, okay, you know, live your life honorably, but don't use honor as, you know, your whole basis for decisions that just, like, let your head come off, because that's really just something that kings say to get people to fight their battles while the kings stay home, you know?
Yeah, that's a good point. I think you might have... I'm not sure. I think you might have just persuaded me. So.
Do you want me to ruin this with what the director said about the ending?
Wasn't he really vague? I think we read something about, like, where he's like, well, anybody can choose whatever they want about it. Okay, what did he say, though?
So he said that it is vague. He says it doesn't matter if he got his head cut off or not. That's not the point of the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, so why did he even bother saying anything at all then? That's stupid.
I'm going to give you my really because you guys both academically outshine me and you think deeper thoughts. But my take on the film, right, and I think it's similar to yours, John, is that like. He like dreams of honor and glory, but that's not really who he is. He's more or less mediocre, right? Mm-hmm. He's one of us. He's scared, and he doesn't think he's up to it, right? Like he tells King Arthur, "What if I'm not meant for greatness?" Right? Because I think all of us kind of feel that way, right? What if we can't rise to the occasion? What if we're not good enough? And so he takes this path that involves cheating, right, with the girdle, right? And like throughout the whole film, he betrays his honorability multiple times, and he gets to this end point, and then he has this moment where he flees, right? And this is like, this is how everything that is built up to this moment has led to the fact that there's no way he's going through with it, right? And then finally, like, as we have our Oxbow incident, it comes back to it, and despite all of his fears and all of his what would you say, lack of confidence in himself or whatever, that he can do it, this isn't even going to matter. No one's going to know if he did the right thing, because his head's going to get cut off, right? And so, but he, at the end, he salvages that honor, right? He admits, hey, I was about to cheat, I'm not going to do that. And so I hope he doesn't get his head cut off. In the legend, he doesn't. But finally, he achieves honor, and it's not the great glory I think that maybe the Knights of the Round Table are looking for. It's just the honor of having been honest and done the right thing and maintained a little bit of integrity. And maybe it doesn't achieve greatness, but maybe he's a little bit closer to being good, right?
Yes.
So
I definitely think, yeah. Okay, there's definitely that. I think there's kind of three layers here. The first is like, okay, he wants, because he knows he doesn't have the honor that people talk about and that people praise, but he has come across a quest where even though he knows he's not the honorable man he should be, he is in a situation where he can tell people that he's the honorable man. You know, it's like, this is something that proves that I'm honorable, even though he knows deep down he's not. And so, like, it's almost like a Maslow's hierarchy of needs kind of thing. He goes up a level, right? And when he gets into, like, the self-actualization at the end, he's able to achieve that. But, again, the Green Knight is just the inevitability of death and decay and, you know, just you know, like, honor doesn't save you from death and decay. Honor is just a thing that you can feel smug and satisfied about. And so he's able to enjoy that for a second. And then the head thing. That's kind of what I think.
Yeah, I mean, I think my take is somewhere between the two of yours. Like, because I do think that he's learning the lesson of honor. But I also think, like, so part of it, and I might be reading too much into this, one thing that actually all three movies I want to talk with you guys about,
cool,
is I think that they are all trying in different ways, and I think actually all being successful at being modern myths, or being myths in a modern sense.
Yeah.
In very different ways, but I think they all succeed at doing that. And I think here, part of the story, and this is, you know, in the original story too, there's sort of this, like, you know, Arthur is, like, at the very beginning of the Christianization of England. And there's this real sense, right, so his mother doesn't come down for Christmas. There's this real sense that his mother represents these sort of, like, older, nature-y gods of England that are just on the verge of going out, right? And then there's Arthurian chivalry is all about conquering that. And the way that I read the story is that his mother is trying to teach him that another path to kingship is not through manly virtue, but through undergoing suffering.
Okay.
And so in all these adventures, he's not the, like, Winifred gets her own head. You know, like, the Lord totally just hooks him up and takes care of him. His wife takes care of all of the business of protecting him and servicing him in various ways. Like, he's just a kind of passive character, but he thinks of himself, and he's kind of a jerk because he thinks he's going to be a knight by being tough. And ultimately, you know, he has to say, like, no, actually, I'm going to submit to getting my head chopped off. And that's why I don't think he actually gets it chopped off, because I think that his mother's teaching him a lesson. But his mother could also, you know, she's like, you know, she's this wild ancient witch. The lesson could be, okay, you have to lose your head. I'm comfortable with that. But I do think that it's like the honors that he's trying to learn is not the honor of the knight. It's the honor of the person who is okay with the patterns of nature and life.
Yeah. So as a bit of a hint, where the director thought this was ending, they did film him getting his head cut off.
Oh, wow.
So if I guess if there is a
was
a
that kind of like how they sent out scripts saying that Chewbacca was Luke Skywalker's father to like prevent people from guessing the real. Yeah. Hmm.
Is that true?
I no, it was actually in the script. It said Obi-Wan is your father. I think.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
Chewbacca being Luke's father was actually comic book guy saying. You know, you have the reel of the lost of the alternate take where Darth Vader reveals that Chewbacca is his father. Okay,
Chewbacca is your father.
Well, okay, let me ask you this then. This is a really broad question, but who is the Green Knight? What is the Green Knight?
The Green Knight is the power of nature.
Right. That's what I thought.
So is it not accidental then that when we meet the forest urchin that he's in the middle of like a giant deforested patch of land?
That's a good point.
Big deforestation, yeah.
Doesn't he say there's just a massacre there or something? But it's like, yeah. Hmm. Yeah, I think it's like that's what knighthood is you guys massacre and deforest things.
Yeah.
Right. Is the Green Knight okay? And okay. By the way, and I haven't read the thing, and I kind of feel I really feel like you know the creators of this movie are, and fortunately, I think we're cool with it because we're not like knightheads. You know, we're not super devoted to the Arthurian legends. Ammon, I hope anyway. You know, not like,
not,
not like
not
the Greek
thing.
Legends, of course.
Not
right?
like the Greeks, yeah.
Yeah,
I like them fine, but yeah.
But I kind of feel like knowing the story of the Green Knight is sort of it's almost meaningless, you know, because it's almost like he's specifically choosing things to do the opposite of.
Yeah.
So, but with that in mind, I do have a question. In the original tale, does the Green Knight also represent nature? Is that just like the green thing? Because green means nature in literature.
So my understanding is that is debated. Hmm. That there are some people who claim that he does. That there's that pagan-Christian interplay is one claim. But not everybody, right? Some people think of it as like a just a challenge because I guess Morgan Le Fay says she's doing it to like tweak Arthur and to piss off Guinevere, right? So like, and in that version, it's the like Roy was saying, it's the Lord of the Castle. So yeah. I don't think it's necessary. I think it's possibly, but not necessarily true in the legend.
Okay.
So in this movie, the lady of the house, right? She gives a big speech about like green. And
thinking about bringing this up, but yeah, it's. I thought that was. You know what? I have it right here. I'm just gonna read it really quick. In the quote section of IMDb, to Gawain, the lady says, "When you go, your footprints will fill with grass. Moss shall cover your tombstone, and as the sun rises, green shall spread over all in all its shades and hues. The verdigris will overtake your swords and your coins and your battlements, and try as you might, all you hold dear will succumb to it, your skin, your bones, your virtue." Which, actually, and I don't understand how green takes your virtue, but it's almost like, hey, you know what? It's not just a physical thing. It's just like, it is the thing. It overpowers everything, including your virtue. How does that happen?
Well, I assume that gonorrhea involves the color green.
Virtue here can mean something like life force, but it could also mean your moral compass. I think it's supposed to mean both in that way.
I think it could mean, and that's kind of what I think of like at the end, the fact that he has honor, and that's why I think his head comes off, because like, okay, you know what, you have honor, but honor won't save you from the green that she's speaking of. You know, the thing that overtakes everything, you know, which is death and nature and earth, and you know, you're just a single organism that lives and dies, and you can't stop that pattern.
Right.
Green Knight.
Hot dang, that was a Ammon, thanks for having us watch this movie. Because I formed a different opinion my second go around.
What was your opinion of the first go around?
Boring. Was that
so-so? I thought it was so-so. Oh, yeah. And the first go around was in the theater, and the second go around was sitting on my bed in front of a small computer screen. So, who knew, right?
Well, I will tell you, this is the first time I saw it, and it was really fascinating. I'm really glad I saw it, but I'm really glad that I watched it on the small TV rather than the theater, because the small TV allowed me to adjust the brightness of the picture, which was very helpful.
All right. Well, at this pace, this is going to be a 7-hour podcast. Yay. So I suggest we move on to Annette.
Annette came out on August 20th of this year. It's 2 hours and 21 minutes. Okay, so Annette, of course, is this movie. It was written by the band from Sparks, which is interesting. And so my question going into it is, okay, so is this a musical? And then as I was watching it, and I was kind of like, you know what? I don't really know the difference between a musical and an opera. I don't know the definitions between a musical and an opera, like what differentiates the two. But for whatever reason, as I watched this, I'm like, no, this is closer to an opera than a musical, I would say.
Yeah.
Just for just some inexplicable reason, you know, maybe because so much of the songs are just just kind of talking songs, and also I kind of got the sense that, you know, after the first big number, a lot of the movie seems like they're like, okay, you know what, let's go back to acting school. Just sing your way out of this scene. Just sing your way out of it.
So does that mean The Umbrellas of Cherbourg is also an opera? But that's exactly how I felt about that movie. Like, every single song just felt like, well, we haven't written a song, but, you know, go for it.
Just wing it, musically. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so, but Annette is about this guy. His name is Henry McHenry, the world's greatest comedian. And actually, I'm not sure. I didn't even think about this, but I think kind of the only non-sung parts of the movie, pretty much, are his stand-up routines, which actually have a little bit of singing. But, you know, they have to not sing during his stand-up routines because, you know, baby, those are the realest stand-up routines ever. They're so raw.
Yeah, they are. They're very provocative.
They're just raw and provocative, and I think his humor is based on non-humor, you know? It's just like, it's almost, I think about this all the time, like, you watch his stand-up routines, you're like, wow, that's the worst stand-up ever. And I found myself several times in the past week thinking about his stand-up routines and laughing hard because they're just so they're so absurdly kind of dumb and non-funny that I actually wind up laughing about him. But, you know, they're based on the absurdity of him being on stage and him hating everybody and everybody really appreciating that. And I guess they love his honesty and, you know, all that. Anyway,
do you remember the name of his show, of his routine was?
Yes, it's
God's Ape.
The Ape of God. Yeah. That's perfect. Anyway, he has a girlfriend. It's Marion Cotillard, and she's an opera singer, and everybody loves her, and she's pure and delightful and lovely. So they get together. And
they sing a magical song.
They sing a song called We Love Each Other So Much.
We love each other so much.
It's possibly the worst song I've ever heard.
Each other.
Yeah.
What are you talking about?
it's we'll get there. And, you know, and they do love each other and
so much.
Yeah, they love each other so much. And he actually sings while he's performing, you know, certain things on her. And it's really graphic and just awkward. And they sing that whisper song. And it's just like, I shouldn't be in this room while you guys are singing to each other so naked like that. But, you know, anyway.
But there you are.
There I am. Yeah. Simon Helberg is in this movie, and he also likes Anne, the girl, and he sings, actually, I thought, you know, We Love Each Other So Much is the worst song I've ever heard, but he sings a song called I'm an Accompanist, and that's the worst song I've ever heard.
But he wants to be, someday he's going to be...
He's going to be a conductor. Yeah, but he's an accompanist.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. Okay, so anyway, Anne... This is a really weird movie. Anne goes into labor, and then it all normals out when Annette arrives.
A normal, definitely not doll baby.
Okay. Yeah. So anyway, Annette is a puppet, And she's this really creepy, weird puppet kid, and it's great, and they're great, but Henry McHenry, and the whole movie is from his perspective, which I find fascinating, because the movie makes no qualms about just his villainy and his disgustingness, and he is just the worst, but it's pretty much all from his perspective, and it's just like... It's like his whole thing is being honest, and the movie is being very honest that he's the worst person in the world, but he's kind of the hero of the... Not the hero, but, you know, he's... You know, the whole movie's from his eyes, and so it's like... It's almost like the movie is asking us to have some kind of sympathy for him, but he is the worst. I mean, he is the worst. So, the point is, he gets jealous, his comedy show is going bad, he's making jokes about talking about killing his wife, and they're like, okay, you're going too far, we're losing it, you know, even though they kind of loved him when he was, like, all being all daring and everything. So anyway, they take a yacht trip, Henry McHenry just kind of, he may have gently shoved Anne overboard, Anne dies. She becomes a ghost, she becomes a Yit Girl. Yeah.
So there's a question.
Are we supposed to understand that, like, that was intentional, or was just slippery Dex and she fell?
Slippery Dex and drunken waltzing?
He waltzed her to death overboard.
I kind of think he wanted her to die. So it was like a wishy-washy murder, I think. You know, like he wasn't like committed to it, but he did want to get drunk enough, and he did want to bring her above deck, and he did want to do it during a big storm because he wouldn't mind her going overboard.
Oh. So yeah. Now's as good a time as any. Do you want to know why Annette's a puppet?
Like, reason? I'm dying to know.
Okay, because the director didn't think that a baby could realistically sing opera, and didn't want to do CGI.
I think that's a brilliant reason, and I think it works great.
Yeah. Because if it was a puppet anyway, then we're like, okay, yeah, that puppet is definitely singing, because it's a puppet singing.
So, like, throughout the whole movie, I'm like, okay, what am I missing here? Like, what's the significance of their baby as a puppet, right? And they probably work something into it in the end, right, when Annette becomes a real girl. But, like, the director's like, well, you know, I the director made it work with the story, but the real reason is, you know, most 18-month-old children can't stand up and sing opera in front of a crowd.
Or lip-sync properly.
Or even lip-sync, yeah.
But, like, okay, I mean, it's kind of funny. You know, I for all of these, I'm kind of like, and I think because, you know, you guys were in my English classes. Well, Ammon, you were in, like, all my English classes in high school, and so I think I kind of had this, like, flashback where, like, I have to find the symbolism of this, and so, which I did, and so like my high school symbolism is just, okay, the people of this world, like Anne and Henry, they were using their own child, you know, like, because they were celebrities, and she was an accessory, i.e. a puppet. They were using her as a puppet, you know, for more celebrity, and so that's kind of I thought.
She makes that explicit in the last song, where she says, if I can jump ahead for a second.
Yeah. Fair.
It's not like it's going to make these clear.
It's not going to make a lot of difference. So.
Yeah.
When she's saying to her dad, either I will forgive you both or I will forget you both. Like, she's making it clear that even though her father is the one who killed her mother, that both of them regarded her as a prop.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Also, now she's a vampire. I choose to take that literally. Nice. That's now literal.
It's funny. She said the vampire line specifically so that we could use this song in one of our Halloween mixtapes, which is great, but I'm not sure I understand the whole when she says, I'm a vampire forever. But I don't know. Okay, so anyway, going on, the accompanist, Simon Helberg, kind of, he's like, he finds out that Annette can sing, and so he goes to Henry. He's like, I know we hate each other, and also Annette might be my kid, but, you know, turns out she's not. And also I love Anne, but let's put our differences aside, and let's exploit. Well, I guess it's Henry's idea to exploit, you know, the daughter. Anne is dead, but she can sing, and so it's like, worldwide, and so Annette becomes a huge opera singer, and then Henry, he flat out murders Simon Helberg.
yeah, they kind of hug fight for a while, and right. then he drowns him.
Right, and it's kind of like
so much bigger.
He, I know, he's twice the size. Oh my gosh, Adam Driver looked huge in this movie. You know, oh dang, I forgot. I was gonna, dang it. It's too late now. I'll just say it right now. I was gonna say that this is the story of like Kylo Ren right after he left Jedi Academy, like, and he became a stand-up comedian before he killed Han Solo. This is like the interim between Jedi Academy and killing Han Solo. this is his character right here. He came to Earth and started just doing stand-up comedy as Kylo Ren. Okay, sorry. Well,
so can I jump in? One crucial thing is that, so not only does Annette sing, right, but Anne appears as a ghost to Henry McHenry and says, "I will haunt you forever."
Or so I can't, Why is her hair like eight feet long when she's a ghost?
Because it's seaweed.
Is it seaweed hair? It's like sea hag. She's a sea hag.
Yeah,
ghost.
She's a sea hag at that point.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay,
so cool. Yeah, she's a sea hag.
But yeah, okay. so not only is Annette singing, but Annette is singing. It's Anne singing through Annette, literally, right?
Mm hmm.
Right.
And yet still they're both like that's fine, we're just gonna exploit the child.
Yes. Yeah, you gotta make the money.
Yeah, so anyway. You
gotta do that. Anyway, the point is, like, this is the same thing whenever you watch ballet, I don't know if you guys think this, like, ballet is nice and everything until they fight in ballet. And you know, at that point you're just like, he's just spinning the ball, you know, just take it away from him, you know. He's just spinning it on his fingers. I swear this ballet is fixed. He's using a ladder, for crying out loud. Okay, I'm mixing my crusty clown references with ballet. But, like, whenever they fight in ballet, they're just dancing around each other. You know, you think of this in West Side Story. It's like, throw a punch. Stop doing pirouettes. Just throw a punch at the guy. And that's what I was thinking, you know, when Simon Helberg was, you know, being drowned by Henry McHenry. Because he still insists on singing, expelling all his energy to singing between breaths of being pushed underwater. And that's
also kind of... Was the whole thing kind of like, this isn't funny and it's getting a little bit dangerous, right? Like, as he's being drowned, he's like, okay, cut it out.
Yeah.
Right? It's a really weird getting murdered scene.
It is weird. I think he was just kind of like, okay, you know what? I know you're the main character of the movie and you probably killed your wife, but I mean, stop killing. I mean, you have to expend a lot of energy to be this bad of a person. Like, just cut it out, you know? Okay, so anyway, they take Annette to the Super Bowl or some Super Bowl equivalent, and she's being droned in, and Annette is like all it's her big finale because Annette's gonna retire because, you know, she's like 2 years old now, and so it's time to retire as an opera singer. But that she kind of has stage fright, and they're like, okay, we'll give her a break. She's a baby, and Henry McHenry's like, oh, that little girl's ruining me. But then she really ruins him when she doesn't sing, but she just says, my daddy kills people. So Henry McHenry is outed as a bad guy in front of everybody. Even though, and that's the thing that bugs me about Henry McHenry, is it's pretty much, the big reveal is that Henry McHenry is exactly what he says he's been all along, you know?
Yeah.
And it's almost like there's this weird thing. I don't know if the movie is commenting on, hey, you know, the whole, like, hey, I'm going to be honest and real, but that doesn't excuse you. Like, just because you're honest and real doesn't give you a right to be the worst person in the world. Just because you admit you're the worst person in the world doesn't give you the right to be the worst person in the world. I don't know. I'm kind of thinking that's what it is. Anyway, Adam Driver goes to jail, and he is met by Annette, and she becomes a real girl, and we see her as a real girl, and it's really amazing. And Roy, she sings in that scene, right? And she does a really good job.
She does.
Yeah,
that little girl.
That's a real girl. So I don't know what the whole deal is with needing a puppet to sing, because that little girl sings really well in that scene.
Well, that girl's now like 7 or 8 years old. She's not like 1 and a half, right?
I guess.
Yeah,
you guess. So anyway, and so then the movie ends, and then in the credits, the whole cast comes out and sings a little song, which is kind of weird.
Song is like, why haven't you gone home yet, right? It's kind of...
it's kind of a weird thing. The tone of this movie is so skewed and strange. It's a little bit... I mean, it is. It is a Sparks album. It's kind of got the weird sideways humor of Sparks, I suppose.
Yeah.
Well, so it actually began as a concept album.
Okay.
And then when they met the director, they talked about it, and they talked about doing music videos, and they said, nah, let's do it as a feature-length opera. Hmm. So that was, like, its evolution story, which I think makes a lot of sense. But
Yeah.
So a famous film critic recently conveyed to me that aside from Mamma Mia, this was the worst movie they'd ever seen.
Was
that your brother, Josh?
That was my brother, Josh.
I cannot believe I like and respect your brother, Josh. That is so wrong.
Yeah, apparently he likes Dream a Little Dream more than Annette. So.
Wow. Wait, you were serious? It is your brother, Josh? I just guessed correctly.
No, it 100% was. Yeah, he texted me. He said, I'm so sorry you had to watch that. And I was like, well. And he said, that's the second worst movie I've ever seen. So,
well, I can see how it's not everyone's cup of tea. I genuinely loved it.
Wow.
You're not a fan, John?
I'm definitely more of a fan than Roy is, for sure. And you know what?
I didn't say that was my opinion.
I'm definitely a bigger fan than Josh. I liked it. This is the second time I saw it. Because I was really excited to see Annette because of the Sparks documentary. So I saw it, you know, like a couple months ago. And then watching it this time, I think I did like it a little bit more. I think my problem with it is, I'm kind of not sure. I think I'm kind of coming to terms with it, but I'm not totally sure, like, because I feel like it's trying to tell me something, but I'm not sure what that thing is. You know, just the fact that Adam Driver is irredeemable and he's sort of the main character, and it's like, okay, yeah, he says he's a mean guy and he does mean things, and like, I feel like there should be a little bit more conflict in that. It just seems like right from the very beginning, that trajectory is kind of set. But I don't know, I might be underthinking that, but I'm not sure.
So I'm not only am I not sure what this movie's trying to tell me, I don't know if it's trying to tell me anything.
Uh-huh.
And maybe it's not, but maybe it just exists, right?
Yeah.
It's just a creative work that Sparks put out there. But also, if it is trying to tell me something, I'm not sure I care.
That's fair.
Yeah. No, that's true. I mean, it's kind of funny because watching the Sparks documentary, I'm just going to go back to the Sparks documentary for a second, and you know, I'm not like a Sparks fan, but I feel like I want to be a Sparks fan because I only know like one or two songs. I'm like, oh, that's Sparks. And the Sparks documentary is just so interesting because the whole thing, as I've said, is all these people who were talking heads in the documentary, like all these people don't know about Sparks, but it's really the best band and they're really so funny and so interesting. But also I'm kind of like just skeptical of Sparks as a funny and interesting band. Because
yeah, if they're the greatest, most interesting band of all time, why have you only heard of two of their songs?
Right.
Didn't we all listen to and love the album Angst in My Paints in high school?
I think I have Sparks' greatest hits. And I don't remember listening to them in high school at all, right? And so, I mean, like, I had an opportunity to steal a car and go get that album, but instead I stuck with the greatest hits. So, but like, the first Sparks song I'd ever heard in my life was when we were in college, and I just heard it on the radio, and it was Music That You Can Dance To. Yeah. And then John introduced me to, what was the, Eaten by the Monster,
of Love, which is on the Valley Girl soundtrack, yeah.
Yeah.
There's what's this town. So Sparks is the kind of band where it's like I had definitely heard the name, mm-hmm. but then when I watched this, I was like, oh, that's ringing a bell with me. And then I went back and like 10 of their songs or so I can think of that I just loved, and mm-hmm. I was like, oh, it makes so much sense that, you know, I don't know, like a lot of their stuff sounds kind of like it could be like the Tubes or the Kinks,
yeah,
and so I probably just thought it was, but then I was, oh, there's this one band that's done all these things, and they've produced a lot too, right?
I don't know. I don't know production credits, but I don't know how much time they have because they have so many albums.
40 albums, but
yeah. Well, it's I mean, and I don't want to say I hate Sparks. I don't, because I think they're fascinating. And after the documentary came out, I went and bought Kimono in My House.
Which is like their first big album.
It was, and it's great. And I was listening to it earlier today, and that's the one that has "This Town Ain't Big Enough for the Both of Us," which is a great song. And it's really cool. I kind of feel like their legacy is measured in amount of songs rather than quality of songs. I feel like if they took 5 years and just like picked the best 10 songs they wrote out of like 100 songs, then I think they could be a little bit more lasting. But they have like their humor, I feel like, is in I don't know. I guess I kind of respect this. Their humor is a little bit more like there's a weird cryptic lyric that could mean anything. And so it's like up to us to find the humor in that, you know. And I think that's why so many musicians like them, because it kind of gives them a little bit of, you know, a way in. It's like, okay, this is a great lyric, you know, because in the documentary they say this over and over again. It's like, what, isn't this a great lyric? I'm like, that's not really that great of a lyric, but I guess if you carry it on yourself and interpret that to be funny, then you can. Then you're allowed. Okay, but Ammon, you obviously love this movie.
And, I did love this movie.
And I like this movie. Yeah. I don't hate this movie. I like this movie. But, like, what was it that caught you about Annette?
So part of it might be, as I said, I really genuinely had no idea what I was getting into.
Fun.
So... but like, okay, so, you know, it opens up, and it doesn't open up with the plot. It opens up with all of them singing together and telling you, again, like, in a kind of funny way, right? Like, you can't get any of your breathing and talking and laughing out of the way now, because we're going to demand your total attention.
Yeah.
And I took it very much so, like, it's very important from my end that it's an opera. And, you know, in operas, like, this doesn't work as a movie. Like, so as I say that I love it, like, but it does, it's not, you know, like, there's no
character development. You love that this is a crime against nature.
Yeah. No, I love that it's melodramatic.
Yeah.
It doesn't, I think what operas can do so well is it's like, okay, here's this story that we could tell in a much more nuanced and subtle way about obsession and violence, about comedy and tragedy, but we're not going to develop it as characters. Instead, we're just going to make songs about it. Mm-hmm. And so the songs convey the emotional weight of the whole thing. But then on top of that, because Sparks is funny and ironic, the songs are always undercutting themselves. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. And so, like, the whole time that Adam Driver was doing his stand-up comedy, or Henry McHenry was doing his Ape of God stand-up comedy bit, like, I did not know if we were going to jump back into song or not. And I think the whole thing, to a certain degree, was it was this, like, it was, I think, anti-comedy, like you were saying. But almost more than that, it was like he was just doing the pacing. It was like a song of stand-up comedy.
Yeah.
He's doing the pacing and the rhythm and the melody of a comedy while saying horrible things. And not even, like, horrible funny things. Just, like, I'm a murderer, I kill people, I do it because I'm a narcissist, you know, like, just, and there's this woman, it's going to be different with her, of course, while conveying it's not going to be, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's all up front there, and it, I think that it worked because it was a song about being, a song about a certain kind of story. So I loved it as a, like, an ironic melodrama. Hmm. Which I guess,
well, but. Yeah. I like the movie more than Roy. I think probably I liked it less
you
than
that.
You.
Don't you put words
okay,
in
fine.
My mouth.
I know. I don't know that. And I think, you know, what you're saying is really valid and cool, and I think that's what the movie is going for. But my biggest problem with the movie is it opened with that song where everybody's singing and introducing the movie, and the song is "May We Start," and they're walking down the street, and it's such a great song, and it's such a great opening to the movie.
Yeah.
And then all the rest of the musical sequences seem like half thoughts, you know, musically. Like, they're just not exciting musically, you know?
So also a problem with this film was, I mean, in his comedy act, he wears like a boxer's robe and he like does shadow boxing before he goes out of there. But he never once fights Apollo Creed or Sylvester Stallone. So that was a problem for me.
I think that's in the prequel. Oh. That's in Annette too.
Yeah. Okay. So, yeah. Anyway. But it's I love the quirk and I love the attitude. I love how the Sparks brothers were piloting the plane that they're flying.
That looked so fun. That looked like such a fun plane to be on.
And I love the serious tone and the seriousness of it and the seriousness of the last song, but also the fact that, like, you know, just some weird decisions, like when they're on the boat, on the murder boat, and like the ocean behind him is just this super obvious like rear projection and like of like waves like 50 feet high that aren't hitting the ship. It's just like footage of waves. And it's just really, really obvious that that's what it is. And it's like, and like they want you to know because it's almost like the movie is better as a play kind of thing.
Or what about when he's telling jokes, when they're all singing and he's telling jokes while she's delivering Annette?
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
that's
another one of his over-the-top moments.
So that might have been his funniest joke of the whole movie, right? Was when he said, "Oh, honey, I'm afraid she's completely naked," or something like that.
Yeah, that was a good joke.
That's his best joke.
He mentioned that she's completely naked, but he forgot to mention that she's a wooden puppet.
Yeah. And most of my laughter is just thinking about just how unfunny Henry McHenry is. Like, I find so much delight in how unfunny he is. He's like,
do we see
Janine Garofalo kind of?
Do we see any other children in this movie? It's possible in this universe that everyone is born a wooden puppet.
If they sing, probably. Yeah. Okay.
All right.
So, anyway. I was just a little bit confused about Henry McHenry being. I'm still confused about Henry McHenry being the main character, but I guess it works just because it's just so. I don't know. I think it's just so sinister of the movie to make him the main character, and also make him just. Not relatable at all, but you know, we have no choice to like try to relate to him even though he's killing people. I guess we don't have to, but it's like, who else are we gonna follow because everyone died?
Yeah,
you can relate to the conductor.
I have since made my own half-hearted attempts to hug drowned people. I'm not there yet, so
you'll get there.
Okay, so anyway, that's Annette. I feel like I feel like I didn't do Annette justice because I feel like I didn't say the good things of Annette well enough.
Yeah, well,
we can get
you
to
only get
awards,
one shot,
though.
Don't you?
Yeah, we got him in awards. That's fine.
You ready to talk about Dune?
Yeah, I'm curious. Now, you were worried about this because you saw it in the theater and you weren't able to take notes.
Yeah, so each movie that we watched is like 15 minutes longer than the previous movie. So where Annette was like 2 hours and 25 minutes, Dune is now like 2 hours and 40 minutes or something like that. So, which is weird because the 1984 Dune is like 2 hours and 20 minutes and it's the whole film, right? But I think you and I talked about this, like, the 2021 Dune, that portion of the movie, like the first half, really is like 65% or 70% of the old movie. And I'm a little worried about what part two is going to be like because the second half of the 1984 movie kind of, I don't want to say the wheels come off, but it gets a little crazy, right? So the good news is I did watch the 1984 version just yesterday for the first time, and what I think I appreciate about that is that I was worried that I would forget a lot of stuff from the movie I saw in the theater, but they're pretty darn close to the same film, right? Like there's lines that are repeated word for word, and the plot is like really similar. So you want the plot?
Go ahead.
Yes. Okay, let's do it. Okay. There's this planet. It's got lots of sand, but also it's got lots of spice. It's the only planet in the entire universe that has spice, but also you need this spice to travel across the universe, which is interesting. I don't know if you see the problem there, but anyway, we'll come back to that later. So
I know I'm sure they cover that in the books, but that is like, you know, I yeah, that's
it's a, the boot. I'm sure, have you guys seen Dark, the TV series that I'm obsessed with?
I've heard it's so good. I haven't.
It's incredible. You should watch it. But they talk about that now. There's time travel. It's the bootstrapping paradox, right? But time travel lets you get around it. But sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt, but yeah.
Oh, no, you're fine. So, I mean, this was going to be my unanswered question, so I can just skip this award when it comes to me. But, like, if spice
only... No, that's not an answer.
If spice only exists in one place in the entire universe, how did anyone get there to discover it other than the people who are native to that planet?
I think I know the answer to this. I think. Ammon, how many books have you read?
I've only read the first.
Okay. From what I understand, okay, and I should have sent this to you guys. There's a YouTube clip, because when the 1984 Dune was on TV, they actually created like this 10-minute introduction of like everything that's happened so far in the universe. Because this is the year, like, what is the year? Is like 10,914 or something like that.
Yeah.
From just a lot of Wikipedia entries and stuff, not by reading, mind you, because I've only read the first book as well. But I've read a couple other things. That year is actually, you know, that's 10,000 years after the Spacing Guild was created. And so we're talking like 20,000 years in the future. So, like, the stuff that happened in between then and now is they did have spacefaring and they did fly all over the universe. But spacefaring is so complicated that they required thinking machines and robots and, like, you know, artificial intelligence, pretty much Terminators, right? And so the robots kind of took over humanity, and so there was like this religious crusade to overturn the thinking machines. And from then on, the universe decided, it's like, okay, we can't have robots taking us over again. And so computers are not allowed. They needed to train people, like the people in this Dune movie with the red... Or not the red, but the black lips. Those are like Mentats. They're like super mathematicians that, you know, do all the computing needs. And then the witches, they have their own thing that they do, you know, the Bene Gesserit. And then the Spacing Guild has the navigators. And what the navigators do is they need the spice to... And it's not like fuel, but it's like they take the spice and it's like this drug that enables them to do the mathematics required that normally a computer would do. And so by that time... Like, the computers had gotten to Arrakis, but they realized that they needed the spice that they had already colonized in order to get, I guess, drugged up enough in order for the navigators to make the calculations to travel through space. I think, yeah.
I wish I hadn't asked that question.
I'm sorry. I know it's dorky. I'm like, I kind of am fascinated with the whole Dune universe because it's so wacky like that.
Okay.
But I haven't read the books.
So here's the deal. Plot of Dune 2021 is pretty similar to Dune 2000 or 1984, except you don't have Kyle MacLachlan. You have Timothy Chalamet. Is he the dreamiest serious actor on the scene right now?
Is he dreamy?
I think he's dreamy.
What are you talking about?
He's super.
And he looks just like you did in high school.
Oh, the poor guy's got a rough life ahead of him then.
Oh, I'm sure Timothy Chalamet is going to have a terrible life.
He's super dreamy. So my other exposure to Timothy is from Gone Girl, in which he's kind of that weird boyfriend, right? Anyway, back to Dune. Okay, there's a planet. It's got spice. You need it to travel because of not robots, but mathematicians who need to be drugged up. There we go. So the planet's called Arrakis. There's so many names of peoples and planets. I'll do my best here, okay? So the Harkonnens had just left because the Emperor told them to. While they were there, they killed a bunch of freemen. The freemen are like the nomads or the aborigines that have lived there forever, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so in the meantime, the Emperor tells the House of Atreides that, hey, it's your turn, go get that spice production up again. And so they head out to Arrakis to get that spice production going. So, Timothy, his name is Paul. What's his father's name?
Leo?
Leo, or Billy. Leo, sure. So he's actually he's a pretty good person. We learned that even though Spice Production's important, he cares more about his people, right? He there's a moment where he saves a bunch of people who are about to get eaten by a giant sandworm, and sacrifices a lot of Spice Production from that day. So, good person. Anyway, Paul, this kid Paul, he's a child that was born from his mother, who's a one of these Bene Gesserits, and she's only supposed to give birth to girls, but she decided to I don't know. Well, she had a son, and she kept it, and it's Paul.
Spice things up.
Yeah! And Paul is going to be the greatest Paul ever, right? So there's a prophecy on Arrakis about a guy named Paul that's coming. And anyway, they get there. They're doing their thing, but they've been double-crossed because the Emperor then tells the Harkonnens?
Harkonnen.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's Harkonnen in Lynch Dune. It's Harkonnen in Villeneuve Dune.
Yeah, so Villeneuve Dune pronounces everything French, right?
Yeah.
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 Good for him. So it's a setup, and House Atreides gets wiped out by the Harkonnens. Paul survives. His mother survives. They meet up with some Fremen, and including, what's her name? MJ.
Zendaya,
sure. Yeah.
How much do you think Zendaya got for making Dune?
For her 5 minutes of screen time and lines in this movie?
Yeah, she was just mostly just like looking at the camera while turning away, you know, and like walking into the sun.
So she's going to be super important in the next one, though. Yeah. So,
well,
right. But when they made this movie, they didn't. I don't think they knew they were making part two. I think it was just kind of like a faith kind of. Like, well, this better be popular. And I think it is. I think it's definitely.
Over 300 million worldwide so far.
Yeah, everybody loves this movie. It's kind of weird.
Yeah. So we're almost at the end of my sum up because this movie's only half of the story. But he has to, like, they're captured by the Fremen who want to process them for their water. They're going to keep Paul because, you know, he might be a prophet. Who knows? But the mother proves her worth by beating up a bunch of the Fremen, and so they're not going to take her water. But then Paul has to fight one of the Fremen who objects to them coming along. I don't know, it's an honor thing, whatever. They fight. Paul's better than the other guy, refuses to kill him several times, but that's not how it works. That's not Fremen custom. So he kills him, and now I think he's the king of the Fremen. I could be wrong. That's where this movie ends. And
I don't think he's the king yet. He'll become the king, but I mean, think now he's just like up enough, right? Like he gets all of that guy's stuff. Can't remember what his name is.
Yeah.
By the way, this doesn't necessarily happen here, but I mean, I don't know why there are so many quote civilized societies that decide things by like, okay, if you can kill this guy, then you're the king of everybody now. I mean, like Wakanda does that for Glaven Out Loud. You know, they're like. So, whatever.
So,
We
got to talk a little bit about the differences. So, like, the main bad guy in both films is this guy called the Baron of Harkonnen, right? And in the first one, he's this grotesque but kind of ridiculous character, right? And I think maybe he's a vampire. I can't tell if he's drinking people's blood or if he's just, like, likes to, like, have it squirted all over him. I don't know. It's weird. So, in the second film, it's like a cross between that character and Wilson Fisk from the Daredevil TV series.
Yes, yes.
Right, he's this immense, huge guy. Like,
okay, sorry. I know this is going to take more time, but we have to do a like side by side. Okay, which Baron Harkonnen do you prefer? Do you prefer Zitty Yelly guy or Wilson Fisk guy in the mud bath?
1984 for sure.
Yeah, for sure. I pick Zid guy.
That one's not even close.
So this is going to be a wonderful exercise in anchoring bias because of which movie I saw before the other one. I mean, there was like a 2-day split here, right?
Yeah.
But I'm going to go with the Wilson Fisk guy that has to swim in like a pool full of black bile or whatever.
When he gets poisoned.
He's certainly more imposing. I did want the 1984 guy to get killed a lot more, though. Oh, yeah, man, I can't touch that. Yeah, a lot of zits. Ooh.
The thing that I will say is, I mean, the Dune book is incredibly homophobic, and a lot of the homophobia centers around the Baron Harkonnen, who's portrayed as is like decadently interested in young men, and which is vile, right? It's vile that Frank Herbert did that. And for as much as I love Lynch, Lynch played that up a bit too,
which is a
big problem in 1984. But if I ignore that problem for a second, everything else about the 1984 Harkonnen is way better.
Okay. Yeah, I like his yelling.
The zitty shrieking, laughing is hilarious.
His flying his flying is like crazy comedic, right? But he doesn't... He doesn't seem as scary. I don't know, but like in when the 19 or the 2021 guy floats up into the air, it's actually kind of like really creepy and scary. And for a moment, I thought, please let it be that he simply has 25 feet long legs, and he was just standing up, right? Yeah, he had the muumuu that covered it all up. Yeah,
but also he was. Wait, is that an award coming up? I think that's an award coming up. Never mind.
Okay, yeah, keep it to yourself, dummy. So, what else was I going to say?
Okay, well, the Paul Atreides. Do you like Kyle MacLachlan or Timothy Chalamet?
That's a no-brainer. It's Kyle.
So I love Kyle MacLachlan.
I'm a fan of Chalamet. I think it's
Kyle. All right. Yeah. Roy?
Yeah, Kyle, right. So, I mean, I don't know. So my anchoring memory of Kyle that makes it so that I like him better than anyone else when we're comparing is... what do you call it? Twin Peaks, right?
Yes, oh, yeah. Yes.
Dale Cooper is a hero.
Yeah,
so,
he's good.
Yeah. But I think that, like, I mean, I love... So I'm told from people who are, like, big Dune aficionados that Timothy probably physically resembles what Paul Atreides is. Because he's supposed to be little and weaselly, so you're surprised when he's, like, this amazing leader and good fighter.
Yeah, not this giant, muscle-bound freak that is Kyle MacLachlan, right?
Kyle is so, I mean, well, he's tall, though.
He's
right?
tall.
He's like, he's skinny, but he's tall. But
feathered and lethal.
The velociraptor of people.
Okay, wait, hang on. Gurney Halleck, though. Gurney Halleck. You got Josh Brolin versus Patrick Stewart.
Well, Patrick Stewart.
Again, that's no question, yeah.
That's like, definitely Patrick Stewart. He's amazing in the original one.
He built that role.
Yeah. Okay, Duncan Idaho, you have the guy in 1984 who I think, okay, you guys can picture him, right? He was the guy, I think, right, in Hunt for Red October who said,
yes.
Let me get this straight. You lost another submarine.
That's him, yep.
That's Duncan Idaho.
Then, I didn't catch that.
And then Aquaman.
Aquaman.
Yeah, Aquaman. Aquaman. I think I actually go Aquaman on this.
Yeah. He owns that role.
He was really good.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe it. Like, you know, especially after seeing Aquaman and Game of Thrones and, you know, like whatever else he's in. You know, I thought he was just kind of a big dumb oaf. But
the thing is, that's what Duncan Idaho is, right? Because he's supposed to be this, like, he's like this big security guy. But he's like also like a really cunning and resourceful person. And I think that, like...
Yeah.
What's his name? I don't even know his actual name. Really owned that.
Jason Momoa.
Jason Momoa, yeah. Yeah, he's great. Okay, yeah. See, is that all I want to talk about?
Lady Jessica.
And he shaved his beard. In like halfway through that film, Jason Momoa shaved, and it was weird. Like, I've never seen him without a beard.
They needed it for his water. They needed his beard water.
They took it for its water. Okay.
He squeezed it.
Okay, Lady Jessica. Oh my gosh, both Lady Jessicas are really good.
Yeah,
I like the new one better.
I think Rebecca Ferguson is just so good though. She's a great actor right now.
Yes, she is.
Yeah,
that's the 2021. Yeah,
I like. I can't choose. I like them both too much.
Fair.
So, are we talking the Sting versus?
No, because Sting
wasn't in it. Yeah.
Sting is Fade Rotha. He has not come in yet.
Okay.
Yeah, we haven't seen him. And we haven't seen the Emperor yet.
Yeah.
So who...
Zeke Raban is that weird guy who barely talks in the 1984 one.
Oh, yeah. He's just a big guy. And then, what's his name? Bautista. The Guardians of the Galaxy guy is... Yeah. He does a pretty good job. Like, I kind of felt like he was more of a real person in the 2021.
Yeah.
Yeah. Leo Atreides. Which father is better?
Oh,
I love
Isaac.
Adam Driver. Or Oscar, I'm sorry, Oscar Isaac.
Yeah, Oscar Isaac Dameron. Is good. I think we're in agreement about that. Yeah, he does. Yeah. He does good there. Oh, one last question.
Yes.
Worm.
Which worm?
Yeah.
Oh, the 2021. Are you kidding? Like the ones from 1984, they're not scary at all. I think they move like 2 miles per hour. And I hate them.
I kind of like the ones from 1984.
I guess you can ride them better.
Yeah. I think I go with the 1984 ones because they look like Omega Supreme's arm, you know, with the three claws that come out. Yeah.
Oh, and sorry, one last category. We got to do this one. Shield.
Oh, 1984 Shield. Oh, it's so good. The big boxes. I think it's so great. Boxes. It's like the Dire Straits video. It's like Money for Nothing or the Beverly Hillbillies Weird Al video. Oh, man, the 1984 Shield is brilliant. Okay.
We didn't do this before, but Annette cost $15 million, and it only made three back. So, yeah.
$3?
$3 back, yep. The Green Knight, I have no idea how much it cost, but it made
$18
million.
You should have seen Annette on a matinee. I really
needed it. So what else do you want to talk about with Dune?
So, I've got a question. I've got a couple questions about Dune. So, first of all, I got to say, I went in, because I'm a bit of a hipster, I went in not wanting to like it. I did like it. Good. I liked it a lot, actually. I do not know why people who have not read or known about Dune like it.
Because Let me ask Roy if he liked it.
No, I liked it. I thought it was a great movie. I really enjoyed it. And I haven't read anything, and I hadn't seen the 1984. So I don't know, right? Because, like, you have some science fiction stuff lately that's fallen pretty flat at the theater. I don't know if there was just enough, like, people who were familiar with the old one to get their friends excited or whatever. But, I mean, I don't know. I thought it was produced really well. And Timothée Chalamet is so dreamy. So I don't know. Also, everyone loves giant worms, right? Because of gadgets, so.
Yeah, I think it kind of hit. Because everybody was really into Game of Thrones, and I think people really learned to, and it's not everybody's cup of tea, you know, but I think a lot of people who got into Game of Thrones really kind of learned to like. This is a crazy new world, and I'm going to live in this world, and it's just going to take me away from this world, and I'm going to be totally concerned with these people's problems on their world kind of thing. Mm. And I think, you know, it's been a little while since Game of Thrones ended, and I think it just kind of hit that spot where people were like, okay, I want to be in a place like Middle Earth again. I want to be in a place, you know, like what's the Game of Thrones place called?
Anyway, Westeros,
yeah.
Yeah.
I think just enough time has passed where it's like, okay, we want this big world. Because Dune feels less like science fiction and more like a fantasy realm sort
of
thing.
Yeah, that's fair.
I don't know. I kind of think it's more of a, it's just a timing thing, maybe.
What I've noticed, because I haven't stopped going to the theater. I've been going to the theater for at least the last year and a half, right? And it's just been really, really small crowds. And I've noticed only recently that, like, big crowds are coming back to the theater. And I think people were ready for a large-scale film like this that was kind of a spectacle and a sweeping kind of an epic story.
You know, something like this where you need something like the scale of Dune is so, like, you know, like, there are those sequences where the ships are going through those giant, like donuts in space, right? Where the ships are just tiny, but the donut is huge on the screen. But then more importantly, the theater sound system is just so great for a movie like Dune, you know, with the thumps of like big, giant things happening.
Yeah, I feel bad that I haven't seen it in the theater for that. That makes sense.
Oh, but,
well,
sorry,
you should.
No, that's okay. I'm still planning on seeing it in the theater when I can. But
yeah, well, fatty.
I know. I'm just my responsible kids wouldn't go see it in the theater with me. It's, all right, fine. But the plot, such as it is, I mean, because one of the things is that there's not much of a plot. It's mostly exposition about the world that you're in. Which now we call world building. I don't know when we started doing that, but like, it seems like a lot of times there's like, even Game of Thrones, there's a huge plot. Mm-hmm. And here there's kind of a plot, but we haven't seen much of it yet. It's mostly we're like, okay, these are the Harkonnens, these are the Atreides, here's the Sardaukar,
here's the Fremen. But the plot, like the whole like chosen one and the prophesied Messiah who will come from out world, and you know, and the reluctant, you know, hero kind of thing. It's so hilarious that plot by 2021 is like the oldest plot. Like it's That's all true. We've experienced for the last 50 years since Dune was written. And I think, you know, it was a little bit, you know, I mean, obviously it wasn't new when Dune was written, but it wasn't like, it didn't saturate pop culture like it has now. And it's so strange that, you know, because that story is like so tired, you know, but maybe living through a pandemic, it's like, you know, we want someone who's the chosen one because all of our chosen ones like lately have just been real big disappointments, like in real life. So, you know, maybe there's something to that. That's like, okay, we have to go back to this thing that we can fall back on and just kind of, and you know what, in, as far as like world building goes and like fantasy within science fiction, I kind of feel like Dune has Star Wars like beat in this sense, you know? I think Star Wars did such a good job of, you know, these intimate moments with like Luke, Han, and Leia, but like all the Galactic Senate stuff and the way the government in Star Wars works and, yeah, you know, really all dumb. The all that kind of stuff, it's like, yeah, it was just, it wasn't as good as this, you know?
I hated how in Star Wars, ultimately, he didn't even need to be, like, the Emperor had both sides already won out, right? So it's like, why did he even bother with his whole ruse? And here, like, yeah, there are real stakes. You really understand, like, what the Harkonnens are after, why the Emperor, like, kind of wants the Atreides to fail, but also, like, is setting it up so that if they don't fail, he can still profit from them. It's much sharper on that kind of thing, that's for sure.
Well, okay, here's a question, though. And I don't know if I totally got this from reading the book, or because I breezed through the book. I probably need to read it again. And the 1984 Dune, but, like, ultimately where this story ends is the like the Fremen taking over Spice.
Yeah.
And so, and I'm sure this is, you know, there are several books after this first one, but like, okay, that's the big victorious thing, but doesn't that kind of doom the entire universe if,
well,
you know,
so
if Spice isn't out?
Are we allowed to spoiler?
I think so. Like, I don't know what I haven't read anything. What you're about to tell me?
I mean, well, I mean, because it's not exactly the Fremen take over the Spice, right?
I don't know. I can't remember, I guess.
Well, so, I mean, okay. So, I'll try to be like, the victory of the Fremen through their chosen one will restructure the order of the galaxy, but it doesn't end it.
Okay.
And so they're still going to need Spice, it's just that the Fremen are going to have a more central control over it. Now, this won't give anything away, because I very much doubt they're going to do this in the movies. A future descendant of Paul Atreides will become a god emperor who eats so much Spice and controls the worms so well that he fuses with the worms
and becomes a
person worm.
If that doesn't happen...
I'm here for that. I'm here for that.
If that doesn't happen in the next movie,
like book 3 or 4.
That's the kind of stuff I dig. I love that. I love people becoming worms.
Oh
that's
my
cool.
gosh,
that's but it's like okay, but I mean, from my understanding, okay, of the books, I mean, this is just a pretty standard messianic. It's like okay, this one will come and he'll solve everything. I mean, it's kind of like the whole, you know, a lot of people on Earth right now aren't super concerned with how bad things are getting because they know Jesus is going to come back and sort everything out.
Right.
And so, but that's Paul Atreides, right? So that's what you're saying, right? It's like, okay, this guy is the only guy smart enough to treat the universe fair, and we need, you know, we need this Christ figure to, you know, to not be selfish, but, and also see everything and just have this ability. And you need a god to be able to do that because, you know, the universe is a complicated place. From my understanding, and I think you're getting to this, the next books after Dune. So I think it's going to be a while. Like if the movies carry on, it's going to be a while before they get really, really interesting because they kind of, they're like, okay, you know what? okay, yeah, after this Messiah thing happens, what happens after that? What happens, like, right. When we deconstruct that whole idea?
Mm. Yeah.
Which is what the next books do, from my understanding. But I don't know. I haven't read them.
So
I have not either. I've just read about them. So that makes sense, too.
So that makes me think that I'm sorry, this has nothing to do with Dune, but I think a great category for the future might be a movies about chosen ones. Because then I'd get to watch Beastmaster again.
let's put that in the sheet.
You'll have to watch all the Harry Potters.
Yeah, we'll have to watch all. But Chosen One stuff. I'm kind of sick of movies about Chosen Ones, but I think comparing Chosen Ones would be the funnest comparison ever. Which Chosen One is the most chosen? Okay. Well, anyway, is that Dune?
That's Dune.
Okay.
So can I ask you guys one question about Dune really quickly?
Yeah.
I don't think this is a weird question. So, okay, another feature of and criticism of the first book in comparison to the movie. I'm just curious how you guys see this tweaking of it. So, okay. So obviously, when Herbert conceived of this, and again, in kind of like gross and obvious ways, he made the Fremen Arabs, right?
Yes.
And spice was oil.
Yeah.
Yep.
And I think that the movie sensibly didn't continue that comparison, even though. So in the book, like, it's like, and this fits in, like, Herbert was apparently like a reactionary in real life, and he had this vision of like the decadent West that, like, he's obsessed with Native Americans and he's obsessed with Middle Easterners, and he had this idea that these like warrior cultures, this is his notion, not mine, were there to like cleanse and purify the decadent Western world, right? Mm-hmm. And I think rightly Villeneuve is ditching all of that.
Yes.
But it seems like he's ditching it to like some sort of proto environmental message, or like some sort of proto like pro indigeneity message. And I'm not sure that I'm, at least that's what I've seen him saying, but I didn't actually see that coming out in the movie. The movie actually just seemed like a really straightforward, like, putting the building blocks of this world together. And didn't really seem to be doing a lot with it yet.
That is so funny, because as I was watching the movie in the theater, all I could think was, oh, this is definitely the Middle East and about oil.
Yeah, that was, Herbert was pretty explicit about that, yeah.
I think I thought oil, just because, yeah, what is spice in my life, right? That's oil, right? That's the way,
that's
transportation,
cocaine.
Right? That's transportation.
Yeah. It's if oil were also cocaine, right?
Cocaine, right. Oil.
I mean, because, like, I guess Villeneuve had to pick, like, an ethnicity, right, for the Fremen to be, right? I don't know if he thought too hard about it, but I just kind of feel like it had to just be non-white people, you know, it had to be other than white is what he felt like he had to do.
Yeah, I mean, well, because again, the Harkonnens and the Atreides are so white, right?
Yeah.
Which Herbert
House is so
white. I
mean,
to a certain degree, one of the things that I will respect in Villeneuve is I'm not sure that he gives them a because why would ethnicity still be and race still be the way that things are organized 20,000 years from now, right? Like, it doesn't, and that's the thing that like Ursula Le Guin, who's from that same era as Herbert, already understood perfectly well. She's like, it's not going to be, right? Like, we're going to have different categories, and that's just the way it is. So I respect that, like, he's not necessarily mapping it onto ethnicities, which is the right thing to do, in my opinion. But does that make it, like, an environmental... Like, it seems like that's where he wants to go, but I also don't see that really working either. But
I think it's just touched on with, like, the palm trees, like, for example.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, we had to sacrifice all this water for these palm trees, you know, because they represent something. But, you know, with all, you know, us squabbling, you know, we mess up the environment, you know, that we specifically had to work so hard to build up.
Yeah.
And it's just gone in a day.
you guys think this was done better than the Phantom Menace when the Trade Federation were just really blatantly Chinese?
Yeah, that was bad. Yeah, no, I thought that this was handled, given the source material, I thought it was handled pretty well.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, I mean, it's kind of interesting because, I mean, racially, I kind of wonder about this. And I think Herbert sort of painted himself into a corner a little bit with the whole blue eye thing, because, like, that sort of implies a sort of Aryan-ness about the Fremen, you know?
But it's from the spice, though, right?
Right, it's from the spice. But also, I mean, no one's... I don't know. I just think it's weird that, like, this spice melange on a desert planet that's red in nature, like, causes people's eyes to be blue. Like,
yeah, that's
a choice, you know?
Yeah.
And so, in, you know, with the Lynch version, you know, we get, like, Max von Sydow is the, like, one of the main Fremen people, and Sean Young, you know, all the Fremen in the Lynch version are just, like, you know, the most deepest of Europeans. you know, and it's just, like, I think that's sort of an unconscious... I think that was, like, very unconscious, like, you know, when we think about, like, you know, how we cast these people, like, an unconscious thing, you know, certainly what I would have done in 1984 is I would have cast Max von Sydow as a Fremen, because it's like, okay, you know, when I think of this blue-eyed person, I think of someone like Max von Sydow, even though I don't know if his eyes are blue, but, you know, but there's just this backdoor Aryan-ness to the whole,
sure,
you know, blue-eye thing.
Yeah, again, Herbert had, and they dialed this down in the movie, Herbert had a lot on, like, well, they'd mentioned this, right? That what's her name? The Ben Jezzard are manipulating bloodlines.
Yeah.
But, like, that takes, again, it takes on sort of a more racial twinge, mm-hmm, in the books that, again, I'm glad they dialed down in the movies. But yeah, I just, like, I get that there's this idea, like, okay, we're going to make this be about, you know, colonized people resisting the colonizer. That kind of makes sense to me. But, like, I don't know. Like, I didn't see... It seems like that was being pushed on it in a way that, like, didn't actually... Villeneuve didn't do much with, just because he spent so much time, like, very boring, basic, like, here are the Fremen, here are the Atreides.
Yeah.
But, I don't know. We'll see what happens in the next one.
It's so interesting that... I mean, and I said this 3 hours ago, but it's so hilarious, like, how obvious it is that Villeneuve just loves the David Lynch movie, you know? Yeah. Like, he just loves it so much, and he's like, no, I'm... It's almost like this movie is, like, this massive multi-million-dollar tribute to a Lynch movie, because there are so many similarities to it. It just blows my mind. And I hope people are going to do what I did, because, you know, they watch this, and then they watch the Lynch movie, and instead of making fun of it, like we've been making fun of it for the past 30 years, that we kind of accept it for what it is, which is John's favorite David Lynch movie.
The thing that I will say about it, right, is it's like, we still, like, so, okay, so when he made that movie, he was going to be a big name, right? Like, he had just made Blue Velvet, which had been actually pretty successful, mm-hmm, both critically and commercially. And, like, he had been offered, if I recall correctly, or at least he was in talks for doing Return of the Jedi.
Yes, he was. Yeah.
Which would have been amazing.
The David Lynch Return of the Jedi would have been my favorite movie of all time. So, yeah.
And that was, like, my parents bought me for Christmas, like, a spice harvester. Because they were like toys made of it. Because it was going to be, like, such a big hit. And it's not like he didn't meet the, you know, he failed to deliver that. But he didn't try to deliver it. Hmm. And he's making a movie that we still talk about and think about 30 years later. Like, I really liked this Villeneuve Dune. I don't know if I'll remember it in 20 years.
Yeah. Yeah. Hmm. That's a weird thing about Villeneuve movies, because the same thing happened with Blade Runner 2049, which I liked a lot. But it doesn't have the... It's almost like it answered too many things, and it did so well at what it was that it's like we didn't have to talk about it anymore. Not like, you know, the original Blade Runner, where I think part of the original Blade Runner is, and part of the original Blade Runner's mysteriousness is the fact that Ridley Scott didn't bother to answer all the questions, and so we... And he didn't bother to ask a lot of questions, and so a lot of the mystique about Blade Runner is, like, us bothering to ask the questions and making up questions to talk about for 30 years, you know, because it's almost like it wasn't fulfilling enough. And Villeneuve just kind of fulfills this all at once. And so I think you're right. I think we're not going to remember this 10 years from now, even though we're all enjoying it right now.
I know that we have to get to awards in a second, but one question on Blade Runner. Did you see, so in the scene in Caladan, that looked to me exactly like the opening in the original, where, what the hell is Harrison Ford's character's name? Why am I blanking on it?
Deckard.
Yeah. Where Deckard goes to see the replicant woman and they have breakfast together. It's hard for me not to read that as an homage to that sort of the entire aesthetic of Caladan looked to me like the aesthetic of the wealthy part of the Blade Runner world. But the way they do the domed lattices, and the sunlight streaming in, I might be reading too much into it because he did the Dune 2049, but
I think it's fair to kind of like look for that kind of connection, because I mean obviously he's into it, you know.
Yeah.
Okay. Dune fun. Fun Dune.
Yay.
Let's do awards. Let's do awards. Roy, are you sleepy yet? I feel like you're drifting off.
I'm not, but I'm excited at the prospect of getting to sleep sometime before 1:30, so.
Okay, so. Okay. An hour and a half. An hour and a half to awards. Okay.
I find that our awards take us about an hour, right?
Yeah, that's true. We'll do this. Okay. We'll do this. Okay. Best title, Roy.
The Green Knight, although every single one of these titles is just like a noun or description.
They're crappy titles. These are the worst titles. Yep. I've never been more disappointed in titles. Ammon.
Yeah, I totally agree. Bad titles, that said, the Green Knight is the best.
Okay, I went with Annette just because I think, you know, it's like a little Anne, you know? So there's like some nuance that's like, okay, this is related to her mother who was killed. And like she's like there. I don't know. Okay, best poster, Roy.
Annette. Although the Green Knight is so striking. I love it's the colors, but
striking.
I went with Annette.
Not green in the background of the Green Knight.
Yeah, no green.
Yeah. Okay, Ammon.
Green Knight. It's a really lovely abstract poster.
Again,
really big bold colors.
Yeah, big bold colors, yeah. I went with Annette on this one. They're dancing on waves. It's crazy.
That is pretty cool.
Yeah. It's crazy.
Okay. Best opening credits, Ammon.
Okay, I mean, Annette, right? Like,
yes.
As Johnny V said, like, whatever else you think about the rest of the movie, the opening with the Spark song and then getting out there and dancing is so solid and so tight, and both visually and musically incredible.
I think this is in contention for my favorite opening credits I've ever seen, maybe?
Yeah. I love the opening credits of both Dune and Green Knight. I loved all three opening credits.
They're great. But, I mean, but the Annette, I mean, first of all, that's the best song, and I just love how they start in the studio and they take off their headphones, and it's real because I could, the second time I saw it, like, there's a difference in sound quality, like, when they're singing into the, like, studio microphones, and then they go out on the street, and you can tell it's, like, boom audio. I think they're really doing that whole thing, but it's just, that's just the most delightful thing of Annette, I think. So, opening credits, Annette. Roy, did you say your opening credits?
I said Annette. I didn't say it, but I am now. It's Annette.
It is Annette. There you go. Okay, Ammon, best technology. This is good.
There was so many tough ones in this category.
Yeah.
I'm going with the camera obscura in The Green Knight.
Oh, I'm glad you said that. That was so insane, right? I mean,
like, it's too early to actually have a camera obscura, but it was fun. And I love the way it made the upside down picture, and the whole shot was so beautiful.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was my favorite technology, is the camera obscura.
Okay, yeah. And if, for those of you who haven't seen The Green Knight, when he goes to the weird Lord and Lady's castle, she actually has this mechanism that looks like it's a water-based film that kind of paints, you know, like it's like a lens that paints Sir Gawain. Okay, Roy, what do you have for best technology?
Spice travel.
Did you say spice travel?
It's fine. Just let's keep going.
All right. Well, no one's saying the ornithopters, the big dragonflies that they got into.
Yeah, those are cool.
Those are cool. Okay.
Those are good too.
Roy, best outfit.
The Baron's giant black muumuu.
Yes, giant black muumuu. Okay. Ammon, outfit?
So related, I think that the fact that whichever Harkonnen it was, realized that if they really wanted to be truly villainous, they all needed to wear, like, solid black onesie robes and shaved heads.
Yeah.
It's a great look.
Yeah.
Solid choice.
It's adherence of Thamomalos from Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey, of course. okay, Roy, outfit.
Yeah, I said it, John. You're not paying attention.
You're the one, John.
All right, Ammon, outfit. Go ahead. Okay,
I did it too.
I know.
It's
I know.
Okay. Oh, John.
Okay, fine. Okay, honorable mention has to go to the still suits, right?
I mean, may as well
drink your crap while you're in the desert, right? and then also honorable mention also in Dune is just the shields that they turn on, and it's the shield that just goes right around the skin. Only the slow blade may penetrate it, which is weird. Like, how this thing can't stop a slow blade? Are you kidding me? But it does stop bullets, I guess, but it does help cinematically, so have them sword fight and everything. But no, seriously, the ladies... Lady Alicia Vikander's plunging neckline blue dress. I mean, come on.
That was on my list too. It was
striking. Gorgeous. I even just like the Green Knight's outfit when he starts out with like the orange kind of cape, sort of.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Okay.
Anyway.
Ammon, best name. There's only one name here.
Oh. Okay. My choice is probably not the same as yours. Thufir Hawat.
Okay, Thufir Hawat.
Which my kids call, when we play the Dune board game, which we play sometimes, my kids call him Super Hot.
Okay.
And so that's all I got.
Thufir Hawat. Which guy was he? He was like one of the Atreides.
Yeah, he's like an Atreides Mentat, I think.
Right, he was the big, like, kind of white black guy, right? The big chubby.
Yeah.
Yeah, that guy. Okay.
Yeah, he's like the main administrator for the Atreides.
Okay, no, that's good. Okay, Roy, did you correctly guess the best name?
Well, Johnny McJohnny. I went with Henry McHenry.
Henry McHenry. That's not correct.
Okay.
You guys, it's 20,000 years in the future. Don't you just love that there's a man named Duncan Idaho? Like, Earth is, like, long forgotten, but the ancients of Duncan Hines and the ancestral home of Idaho are still resonating 20,000 years in the future. Okay, Roy, best food.
Sure. Looks like they have one heck of a feast at that castle, the Lord's Castle, right?
That looks like a good feast, yeah. I can see the details. Okay, Ammon, best food.
I mean, I've not had it, but when Paul has his first spice, he like stops from running away from a worm. So it must be incredible.
I also picked the spice melange. Seems like a pretty great thing to put in your face. Okay, Ammon, best alien. This actually counts.
Best alien. I mean, there's no contest. Space worm.
Yeah. I wrote down sandworm, but I see where you're going.
Roy, that's what I meant.
Did you also pick worm?
So my honorable mention, however, is Annette, because Adam Driver declares that she's out of this world.
Oh, yeah.
That's a really good point.
So just like Republican credits should be called space bucks, we'll call it space worm.
Okay. Okay, Roy, best special effects.
Space worm.
Okay, yeah, it's a big worm.
It's a really big worm.
It's really big. Okay, Ammon, special effects.
Annette.
Actually, yeah.
She's a doll who can sing.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
It's not CGI. It's a puppet. They used a puppet.
It works.
Yeah, so it works. I wrote honorable mention to the shields in Dune. Not as good as the Lynch shields, I put in parentheses. I actually wrote that down. But my actual winner is the real Annette, which looked amazing, you know.
That's true. It looked like a real
child.
That
was a pretty good effect, yeah.
Yeah, real child there. Okay. Okay. Ammon, best location or planet?
So the Sardaukar Imperial planet, where they just sit around and meditate, like, in some sort of, like, giant cult world.
Yeah.
Where they just, like, listen to gong music. I think it would be a really serene place to hang out before you go kill.
Yeah, no, that's crazy. The Sardaukar, man, they were like the Reavers from Firefly. They were just like, I thought the Sardaukar would be just like these elite kind of, you know, almost just effeminate, just kind of high class killers, but they were just like these weird monster people.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Roy, planet.
Well, location. I originally was going to say Camelot, but as it turns out, Camelot is a silly place.
Mm.
So the Lord's Castle. That's pretty boss. Yeah.
So good. Yeah. Okay, I went with planet Caladan, which apparently is, you know, they achieved dominance on that planet by controlling the rivers and lakes and seas and sky, and so it's kind of like it looks a lot like, you know, Norway. Ish, I don't know. Ireland, maybe.
It was very green. Yeah,
yeah, very green. All right, Roy, best song.
Okay, I think you pronounce it "Be Merry, Suete Lorde."
Oh.
From the Green Knight, but it was lovely.
Which one was that?
It was a song from the Green Knight.
Okay. At what point in the movie was it when they're?
It's towards the end. It sings about being merry. It's got a nice tune. So. Not as good as the Tale of Sir Robin, but it's pretty right. good.
Okay, Ammon, what did you say?
The Sympathy for the Abyss, the duet between Henry McHenry and
Annette McNecht.
Annette McNecht when he's in jail.
Yeah.
I was touched by it.
Yeah.
But I was sold on the story before that, so.
We didn't really get, I mean, that's the part where I don't think I mentioned it in the summary, you know, where she says, you know, I'm leaving now, and you have no, are you sad because you have no one to love? And he says, can't I love you? And she's like, no, you're not allowed. And then they sing the song.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty brutal, brutal stuff. I can't believe, okay, we just talked about this, though. The correct answer is So May We Start. That's like
that
the best song.
That was my runner-up.
Yeah.
Mm.
It's such a great song.
Mm.
Okay.
Mm.
All right. Ammon, best guest.
You guys are going to tell me this doesn't count, but Sting. I get that he was only in the Dune 84, but he was so good that he
I will kill
all
you.
The movies.
Sting was so good in that. Yeah. Do you think Denis Villeneuve didn't introduce the character because he's like, what if I can't get Sting to be in this movie?
Yeah, I think that's exactly right.
Okay, Roy, best guest star.
Sure, I went with Aquaman.
Okay.
Our first movie with Aquaman.
Aquaman was in it, yes. Yep. Jason Momoa. I went with Zendaya as the guest because she really wasn't in the movie. Yeah.
So the thing with Zendaya is, like, for the last 10 years, she has looked the same age to me, and it's like 16. Mm-hmm. So I feel weird watching Zendaya movies because I know she's like 32 now, but she still looks like a little kid.
Yeah, she does. Also, I don't know why she's so popular. Like, I don't know. Like,
because
what is
she's kind of cute, but she totally doesn't care.
Yeah. I mean, that's all I ever see her is, you know, things where she's just not caring. Was she a pop star? Sorry, excuse my ignorance, but...
She was a Disney star, I think.
Yeah, what was she in? She was in Shake It Up, I think was the name of the show, right? And
she was
opposite that redheaded girl that was also a Disney star.
My daughter tells me that she's very tall, which meant that they had to put Zac Efron in high heels for a lot of his
That his makes me happy.
Roles. I don't know. She might be fucking with me because she's like, my dad doesn't know who any of these people are.
Yeah.
Which is true.
Yeah. No,
I'm vaguely aware of who Zac Efron is, but like...
Oh, Bella Thorne was the other girl. Bella Thorne and Zendaya in Shake It Up.
Okay, so she was in Shake It Up. You know, Zendaya was pretty good in Euphoria. I watched the first season of that anyway. It wasn't really my show, but she was really good in it. That's who I said for guest. Okay, Roy, best external recurring character.
Okay, so we had a few choices, but I went with Alicia Vikander from Ex Machina.
Yeah, she was the robot in Ex Machina. Brilliant. Brilliant in that.
Yeah,
she's so good.
I forgot that she was.
Yeah, and then she had the dual role in Green Knight. She's so good. She's one of my favorite people, Alicia Vikander. Okay, Ammon, what did you say?
So I said Stellan Skarsgård. He plays submarine captain Tamanov in Hunt for October.
Hunt for October. Oh, and yes, Tamanov. Okay, yeah.
Apparently, his very far in the future descendant, Vladimir Harkonnen, has continued the military tradition, the Russian military tradition. So I think that's
interesting. Okay, so Stellan Skarsgård is a Russian. Okay, well, my official answer for this is Alicia Vikander, but since Roy took it, I'm going to actually have my official one be podcasts with Ammon on as a guest star, where a woman plays a dual role in one of the movies. Yeah, what's her name was in Ulysses, who played both Circe and Penelope.
And
oh, that's true.
And we also found out is the Mother Superior, or the Mother Ben Gesserit.
Mother Ben Gesserit in 84. Yes, yes.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah. So much connection. Okay, beautiful. Okay, best, Ammon, best internal recurring character.
So I didn't have Alicia Vikander for the other one, because I have her for this one. She plays both Essel and the Lady of the Manor so brilliantly.
Very good. Very good. Yeah. Way to manipulate the awards. You're a pro already. Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay, Roy, who do you have for internal?
Well, I have Andy Malcolm, who was on the sound team for both Dune and The Green Knight.
Okay. I have Don White, who was on the sound team for Dune and Green Knight. Also, honorable mention to the year 2021 on this.
Okay.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, best death.
My honorable mention goes to Jameis, who died in Doom. It seemed like an honorable death, but then let's go with Garwain, because he dies a couple times, right? I'm assuming that he gets his head chopped off at the end. But if he does lose his head at the end, it's an honorable death. So
wait, so you were assuming he's getting his head chopped off?
Yeah.
So you flip-flopped.
I can't. I've decided now that he is. I can't square what the Green Knight says at the end with him not getting his head chopped off.
Okay.
Because otherwise, it's like that's not a funny joke.
Okay. Perfect. I also pick Gawain.
Okay.
Ammon, who do you have for death?
So for the honorable death, I have the conductor being hugged to death. But
yes.
I'm going with Duncan Idaho. He really did a lot with his death, and he saved Paul and Lady Jessica.
Yeah,
Sardaukar. So
he was so spry after being stabbed through the abdomen.
Yeah, like how did he even do that?
It's gonna be so rough to, man. I'm gonna be so annoyed when the next movie comes out and Duncan Idaho's not in it, and we have Gurney Halleck in it instead. I'm just like way more Team Duncan Idaho than Gurney Halleck. Like way more.
I mean, but Patrick Stewart was so great. But yeah, now who cares?
Yeah, totally. Okay, let's see. I said Gawain. Okay, best villain, Ammon. Who do you have for villain?
There's only one choice here: Henry McHenry.
I also chose Henry McHenry. Oh my gosh! It's funny. I kind of liked Adam Driver before this. Now he's got the taint of Henry McHenry. Roy,
he looks like he'll be a good guy in The House of Gucci, though. So you got that to look forward to.
Yeah, I do. I will look forward to that. Yeah.
Yeah. I went with the Baron because I kind of want to like the villain a little bit.
Yeah.
That's fair.
That I think my favorite difference between the old Dune and the new Dune is the tooth poison. Because in the new Dune, the tooth poison kills the whole room, but Baron was able to like go into like this Baron cocoon on the ceiling to save himself.
His little Baron chrysalis up there.
Yeah. Which I didn't see. That was just so weird and freaky. Okay. Let's see. I said Henry McHenry. Okay. Best hero, Roy.
Oh, okay. Let's see who have I got. I got Sir Gawain. Okay. I think in the end, he's a hero.
For a second. Yeah. Ammon, hero.
I've got Essel.
Yeah.
Because she puts up with Sir Gawain. And, like, she actually loves him. And, at least in one of the scenarios of his life, is treated so horribly.
Yeah.
But I would like to think persists. And I think she's great. And I think that Gawain should forget his whole quest and just go marry Essel and be happy.
Yeah, I think so, too. I totally.
She's got a great haircut too. I really like her haircut.
Yeah, it's funny. It's like, yeah, I dig that hair. Weirdly enough, even though she like asked for the like I don't know the Mark Cuban or something. She's like, give me the Mark Cuban.
But it looks great on her.
Yeah. Okay, I'm gonna go with Dr. Yue as the hero, even though he's a bad guy, he's a villain, you know, because you know he does this despicable thing. He brings House Atreides down, but he's compelled because they were holding his wife, right? But he kind of went the extra mile by providing the Duke Atreides to. Like, he provided a way for Duke Atreides to take down Baron Harkonnen.
But it didn't work, though.
It didn't work. I just really love that Dr. Yue actually did this huge, big, elaborate plan, and he didn't just turn him over. Because he was going to turn him over because he had his wife, but he actually had this huge plan, and it almost worked. And so that's why I'm picking him.
All right, fair enough.
Okay, Ammon, best goof?
Annette forgetting to sing at the Super Bowl.
Yeah, that was a big goof.
Unless the song that she was trying to sing was "My Dad Kills People."
That's what Henry McHenry should have said. He's like, "That's the song. That's just the song." Roy, did you say your goof?
I didn't. Dune uses feet and meters in different times.
Wow.
Oh, good call.
That's a good call. Okay, my honorable mention goes to Annette, and that's the heights of the backup dancers, of Henry McHenry's backup dancers, are wildly different in the opening sequence than when he's on stage. And I looked at their feet, and they're all wearing heels, and so I don't get how the heights are so wildly different in the scenes. But then my winner is that Dune was only Dune only had like half the story.
They really screwed that up.
Yeah, like they forgot a lot of stuff. But okay, Roy, best LOL moment.
Okay, so all these movies were really funny.
They were so funny, all of them. Yeah.
Yeah. So in Annette, during the opening credits, they're singing the song. Is it called "Can We Start"?
Yeah.
So maybe
right. May we start, right? And right at the end, when they finish singing it, there's a cop that says, "Don't try to start." And I thought that was really funny.
Okay, Ammon, LOL.
Green Knight, last line of the movie.
Okay.
It's like you did such a good job. All right, now off with your head.
Really? Roy didn't convince you that wasn't funny? Okay, I picked in Annette when Henry McHenry has the dream that he's babysitting, and he realizes he's actually literally sitting on the baby.
I don't think that's a dream. Because it was explained to me somewhere. I don't know where I read this, but like, since the baby's a puppet, it doesn't have to breathe.
That's fortunate because he totally sat on his baby for 3 hours.
You can sit on baby Annette and it's not a problem. So, yeah.
It's just a little wooden and uncomfortable. Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. Roy, best WTH moment.
Okay. So it's got to be the drowning of the conductor, right? Like, that's the weirdest scene. It's really awkward. It's like, is there such thing as an awkward murder? But it would like, you'd be so weird to be murdered that way, right? It's like, what's going on? That's it. Me.
Okay, Ammon, what in the world moment?
The Giants.
Okay, yeah. It's gotta be the Giants. Yeah, like, it's like, really? There are Giants, okay, I can buy that, but bald Giants? And then they're naked? And then they don't give them a ride? Yeah.
Just give them a ride.
Yeah, like, what's up with these guys? That's okay. Yeah, I put New Giants down. But also I put the Harkonnen like weird hand oil spider pet thing. It's just obviously like a hand in the latex glove. That's just like this giant latex glove hand spider thing. It's weird. Okay. Ammon, best scene.
Okay, this was a tough call.
Okay.
But ultimately, and even though I felt like it was too long, I think for sheer virtuosity, the 60-year whatever dream or oxbow incident scene where Gawain imagines this whole future.
Yeah.
As a way of telling a story, it was incredible, even though it was a little too long.
An honorless future, yes.
Yes, that's a good way to put it.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, that's good, that's good. Okay, Roy, best scene.
It's the end of the Green Knight, right? When he takes off the belt and submits himself to his just desserts, I guess. Hmm.
Okay, surprisingly, I actually went with the end scene of Annette when, you know, as weird and as nonsensical as the entire movie is, I think them talking to each other and just, like, coming to, trying to come to terms, but ultimately, like, the point is they don't, in that song, where Annette becomes real. And it's like, it's suddenly the movie is just so much more real. Like, when we were so used to the puppet, to have a real person doing that was, like, kind of more, you know, it, like, felt more, you know? Okay.
Yeah, that was my honorable mention. I really liked it a lot.
Oh, good, good. Okay, Roy, best actor.
So I'm going to go with Rebecca Ferguson as Lady Atreides.
Oh. She's good.
She does a good job.
When she does the voice, holy cow.
Yeah.
I'm dying! Okay. Ammon, best actor.
All right. Again, I know I'm not allowed to choose Kyle MacLachlan, so I'm not. But I just want to register.
So you're going with Sting again?
So I'm going with Sting again. No, and I'm also not going with David Lynch's cameo.
David Lynch is the worst actor that's ever been on film, but he's always in those movies.
I'm going with Adam Driver. He was so loathsome.
Yes.
And so physically dominating and funny at the same time as Henry McHenry.
Yeah. I thought about picking Adam Driver. I specifically didn't, and I think it's because, and it's unfortunate, but I kind of feel like the range of Sparks' music is just perfect to go against his voice. You know? Like, I feel like he's just in the wrong voice. Like, he's singing in this weird register that makes it seem like he can't sing. But I know he can sing because I saw Marriage Story, and he sang Being Alive in the bar that one time, and it was really great.
So, oh, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, I went with Jason Momoa as Duncan Idaho. It's like,
he does really good.
Yeah, I've never wanted to hang out with someone more than Duncan Idaho. Okay, question time. Ammon, are there any questions that did not get answered?
I think we've answered most of the, or we've at least brought up most of the questions that I have.
Yeah.
Here's kind of a meta question, and I'm just going to throw it out there. So you guys know that I have a professional and artistic interest in myths in general.
Yes.
And I think that all three of these stories try to be myths. I think that they are all in their own way successful. So, but my question is why will only Dune be loved?
Okay.
Because, well, Annette will only be famous adjacent.
Yeah. Annette has a Sparks curse where they'll never be famous. And also, they'll never be famous because have you heard their music? It's pretty good. But. You know people won't like it. I mean, it's like this is kind of good, but it's not music, you know. So and then the Green Knight, I think
is it just too demanding?
It's too demanding. That's exactly the word I was going to use. It's too demanding. Not so much like. I don't think not so much intellectually, but I think to really enjoy The Green Knight, you also have to, it requires you to ask questions of yourself. And since I'm always just nervous about, like, my honor and how good of a person I am and, like, will I ever amount to anything, it's right up my alley, so I loved it. You know, and I'm just open about that. But I think everybody else, like, they don't want to talk about that stuff because either, you know, they're too insecure about it or more likely – they aren't as far gone as I am. And so they don't, you know, they're not in that world.
They can't embrace it yet.
They can't embrace it. They can't, you know, have that sympathy for the abyss, I suppose, to link all these things together.
Nice.
Yes. Okay, Roy, any questions?
Nope. I think we got mine.
Okay, yeah. Obviously, my big question is, did Gawain die at the end? And also, what's up with the new giants? I think we kind of touched on that. Which I think we attributed it to mushrooms, right? Okay.
Yeah. Maybe,
but does anybody have any other answers about the new Giants, or is it just like some weird thing that's just like, okay, it's just weird, we'll just have to accept it?
There's real nude Giants.
Yeah.
I think that's the answer. This is what's there.
Okay, I do have a question. Speaking of racial casting, and I hate to bring this up. Well, no, I don't hate to bring it up, but I just think it's kind of weird, because when I heard that Dev Patel was going to be in a movie called The Green Knight, I'm like, how could Dev Patel be in a movie that takes place in medieval England? I mean, he's straight up Indian, right?
Yeah. I think it's great that they just didn't care. They're like, you know what? We're just going to run with it.
Like, they obviously didn't care.
Holy cow, you're so racist, John.
They obviously didn't care. And, like, his mom, right, was, like, I guess the half-sister of Arthur. So,
right. You
know, there's, like, something there. But I guess that's it. You know, because I've never heard anybody discuss it or talk about it. But as long as we don't care, I guess it doesn't matter.
Yeah, I mean, we suspend judgment in other ways. Like, I dream of a world where, unless there's a reason to need a specific ethnicity or race, it's just never even, it's just not a question.
Because Amber's colorblind.
No one is, right? But I dream of a world where where it doesn't matter.
Yeah. See, and that's fair, but I mean, taking that to more of a, you know, an extreme, you know, if I wanted to argue with you about that, I mean, isn't there a need for a race in this, considering the time and place?
No. I mean, the question is, what kinds of things do we suspend, right? So we don't have to get into the weeds too much on this, but like, I think that race is a very much a modern notion. And the question is, like, why do we retain the race of the actor when we are willing to suspend so many other things? So, you know, Dev Patel is not the nephew of whoever the hell the actor is.
Yeah.
But we don't care about that, right? And, like, similarly, you know, if I was cast, you know, next to somebody who was, let's say, Italian, of Italian descent, despite the fact that everyone who knows me knows that I'm super, like, Northern European, right? Like, I don't think anyone's going to be so worked up about it. And I think it's just resetting our expectations.
Mm. Yeah.
John, I went ahead and double checked, and Dev Patel is definitely not the nephew of the guy who plays King Arthur.
Thank you, Roy.
By the way, what's up with the guy who played King Arthur? What's up with his voice? So weird.
I think is he sick or dying? He's got like tooth disease or something. I think he's slowly dying.
He's like always like just high whispering, you know. But Ammon, let me just racial casting. I don't know if I want to do this very much because I'm lousy at conversations, you know, with this, you know.
That's okay.
But because I kind of like what you're saying, because I do really appreciate like how race doesn't matter. Do you foresee a future that, do you think the Green Knight will establish something like, okay, if race doesn't matter, race really doesn't matter? Because, you know, the flip side of this, in a way, is, okay, everybody, you know, in order to achieve the representation, like if if the character is Korean, then we have to cast a Korean. If the character is Russian, we have to cast a Russian. You know, for that kind of representation. But is it going to be a better world when it's like, okay, you know what? It doesn't. Let's still represent everybody casting wise, but we don't have to like charge to like, you know, exactly what they're going to be cast as in the character.
Right. So we're not there yet.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, that's where it's like, you know, you're redressing historical wrongs. So Hollywood is still dominated by white people.
Yeah.
Yep.
And until that changes, you've got to take those things into account.
Yeah. So, and
there's not a programmatic answer beyond that. Yeah. Sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah. No, it's okay. So I think like what Ammon more or less said is right. Is that the problem in the past has been you're always casting white people in different ethnicities when there's perfectly capable actors of those ethnicities who could use a job, right? But they're not getting used. And so I don't know. And I see what you're getting at, John, right? It kind of feels like, well, you can substitute what should be an Anglo-Saxon character with another race and no one's going to say anything. But if it's supposed to be a Chinese character and all of a sudden you're using Hillary Duff, then there's a problem, right?
Or a Korean character might be a problem.
Yeah.
I kind of like the idea of Dev Patel playing kind of an assumed white person because, well, you know what? I don't know. Maybe there were a lot of races back in medieval England, you know, because, you know, maybe the world was bigger than I think it was.
Well, no, it was still Pangea at that time, I'm fairly certain.
That's right, yeah.
So...
Was it? Okay.
No, it wasn't.
We'll end there. Okay, no, it wasn't.
Okay. What's the next award?
Okay, Roy, best line, best quote from one of these.
Okay, it's from Essel, and she says, "Why greatness? Why is goodness not enough?"
Oh, you,
it's a good question.
You took
and
mine.
I think
I
at the
that.
End of the movie, he foregoes his chance at greatness, and he accepts goodness.
Yeah, and I really like, because, I mean, I think really what she's saying is, not so much like don't try to be a great person, but also don't throw away something, you know, for the sake of other people that are, yep, you know, because other people are manipulating you to be great, and you're, you know, you could just be good on your own with me, and that's what matters more.
Yeah.
Okay. Ammon, do you have a line?
Imagination's strong and reason's song is weak and thin. We don't have long. That's
that
what
Sympathy for the Abyss.
That's what Henry McHenry tries to tell.
Yep.
What's her name in Annette in Sympathy for the Abyss?
Yeah.
And I think it's right. Like that would get longer into my whole sort of what my philosophy is and stuff than we have time to do. But but I do a lot with what imagination, how imagination plays into the way that we think about the world. So it resonated with me.
Oh, nice. I like it. Okay, I had two lines from Green Knight. First of all, why greatness is goodness not enough, and also the green will take over our swords and our coins and everything. So I'm going to actually ultimately pick in Annette, when Annette goes to the Super Bowl and the announcer says, "And now, baby Annette," and then she doesn't sing anything. And then the announcer says, "We ask for your patience. Baby Annette is a baby, after all."
That's a really good point.
Yeah. Okay. Roy, let's do this. Do you have your taglines ready?
Sure.
All right. First of all, what's the winning tagline of the three that exists?
Well, there's only one that exists if we're going by the posters, and it's from Dune, and the tagline is "It Begins."
Okay. I picked a different one, but we'll get there.
Okay, well, all right. So you want me to go through my alternates as well?
Yeah, go through your alternates.
Okay, the Green Knight, watch as he bravely turns his tail and runs. So for Annette, comedy versus opera, who will win? No one. So, and then Dune, there will be worm sign.
The worm sign, oh, the nice. Likes of which God himself has not seen. That would have won my best line if we did the 1984 Dune. That's my favorite line of any movie ever. Okay, Ammon, what's your favorite tagline from the movies that exist?
So I misunderstood that category. I thought you were just going to tell us the tagline, so I did not pick one there. But I do have alternate taglines.
Okay,
so
go ahead with the alternates, yeah.
Okay, so Green Knight. You don't actually have to hit that hard.
Yes.
I just tell them up front.
Yep, yep.
Annette, the comic, the diva, and the puppet who sang.
Oh.
And then Dune, part one of 42.
Okay, nice. Okay, for my favorite tagline that exists, I actually went with Annette, which is Amazon original movie. Yeah. Okay, my tagline for the Green Knight is, what's more important, honor or pretending to have honor? Nice. Okay, for Annette, I have, brought to you by Sparks, the recipients of 30 aluminum albums. my tagline for Dune is, don't worry, the events of this movie won't happen for another 20,000 years. Okay, Roy, titular line, please.
I had one. Okay. Oh, anyway, the real one is in Dune, where the Baron says, "This is my Dune," because he actually says it. Yeah. They say Annette's name a bunch of times, so you could choose one of those as well.
Yeah. Okay, no, that's good. I picked, I'm just going to say it really quick. Baron Harkonnen says, "Arrakis is Arrakis, and the desert takes the weak. This is my desert, my Arrakis, my Dune."
Very good.
So that's good. Yeah. Ammon, do you have a titular line?
I do. So again, I misunderstood this category, so that is my bad. But I'm going to go. I know, I really am.
You can make up for it in 2 weeks.
I don't think anybody's gotten this category yet. I don't know if we've had success with this yet. That's fine.
I'm going to go with one of the 42 times they say the Green Knight.
Yeah, that works.
You can pick whichever.
That works.
So okay. I was worried that you had misunderstood it and your award was going to be given to the Giants, but it's fine.
Okay, now, Ammon, this is perfect for you, though. I'm going to skip right to you, because this is, I think this award came about because of you being on our mythology podcast. But what's the best Odyssey reference?
I did not, so I am going to go with the Giants for this one.
Okay.
I feel like there were a lot. The other close call was drowning. I went back and forth between the Giants and drowning.
A lot of people drowned in the Odyssey. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, that's good. Okay.
But the Giants is my choice.
Okay. Let's see. Roy, by process of elimination, is this the award that you're doing for the last time?
I would like to, but if you're going to insist, we can keep doing it. My answer is Dr. Yue is the Cyclops because he's got that diamond in his forehead, right?
Okay.
So it's a lame answer, and also, yeah, I'm tired of this award. But if you love it, then I'll keep making up bad.
I don't love it. We only made it as an award because you and JB thought it was funny that I'm like, not everything is an Odyssey reference.
That's true. So I'm ready to strike this award.
Okay. Well, we could do it one more time because Ammon's joining us next time.
Okay, fine. Ammon, you're going to do the last Odyssey award
next time.
All right, fair enough.
All right, cool.
So, John, what's your choice on the Odyssey?
My choice is when, in Dune, when they go to the worm and they were between the worm and the rock, and it was kind of like Scylla and Charybdis, you know.
Oh, nice. The rock, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so now let's get into the special ones. I don't think we mentioned this to you, Ammon, but you can.
Yeah, I don't think
I'll figure them out. It's okay.
Yeah, yeah. Because these are the Ammoniest awards.
All right.
Okay. So, we definitely don't want to know your favorite, your Ammoniest movie, but I'm just going to go ahead and say, I say the Ammoniest movie is The Green Knight. Roy, what do you think?
I concur.
Yeah, Green Knight. Okay.
Yeah.
You don't say your Ammoniest, because that would kind of give away. Maybe. Right. Possibly. I don't know. Okay. What's the Ammoniest scene, Roy?
I'm going to go... Oh man, I'm way off, but I decided the Baron's healing liver bile spa.
Yeah. I thought about that one.
Sure.
Okay, Ammon, you can go ahead and pick your Ammonia scene.
Wait, John, what was your Ammonia scene?
I'll tell you my Ammonia scene. It's definitely the Henry McHenry stand-up sequence. I felt like most connected to you.
The second one?
The first one. Okay. He just introduces himself, and I'm like, this is totally Ammon in a scene.
Ah, thanks so much. I did love that scene. But no, so yeah, so my Ammonia scene I think would probably be that's a really good there were a lot in both Annette and the Green Knight. But
strangling the conductor probably, maybe.
I'm gonna go with the very end of Annette.
Okay.
Yeah.
I spend a lot of time with kids nowadays, so I can really relate to like your kids telling you
that you're not allowed to love them.
That's true.
Yeah. Hey, you can get those kids vaccinated now for the ones that are older.
No, mine are too young. So mine are either old enough already or too young.
Dang it.
Yeah, I know.
Oh well. All right. Soon enough. Well, you could probably figure out another way to like, you know, make them hurt somehow. But besides that. Okay, let's see here. Roy, do you have a best Ammon character?
Yeah, it's the conductor.
Okay.
Sorry about that, Ammon.
Fair enough.
Hey, he's kind of got curly hair like Ammon does, like the wavy curliness. Yeah. I went with, what's his name? Peter DeVries?
Oh, nice.
The Mentat of the Harkonnen Mentat, who's just, I don't know, he seems pretty smart, you know. He does a lot of math in his head. So yeah, he kind of does the eye roll back, and also he's cunning. Okay, Ammon, do you have a character that defines you?
So I'm glad that neither of you picked the field urchin
Oh, dang it. We should have. That guy kind of has your sense
missed
of humor.
Opportunity.
Yeah, he kind of trolls people the way you do, I think.
Yeah, I really I would like to think of myself as kind of like the mother of the Green Knight, but I'm not, so that's wrong.
Okay.
No, yeah, no, that's totally wrong. I think John, you might be right. It might be the Harkonnen Mentat.
The worm, one of the ones.
One of the worms.
Latex spider? So
yeah. I'm hoping to see on your Facebook post when people say something stupid, I'm hoping you'll respond with "Tweren't enough."
Tweren't enough.
Tweren't enough, yep.
Okay, wait, sorry, did you have another answer, Ammon?
No, I don't have another answer.
No, that's good. Okay, perfect. Let's see. I don't think... Okay, Battle Royale, really quick, I'm just going to go with the Sandworm. It's probably going to eat everybody.
Oh, I didn't know we were doing a Battle Royale.
I didn't either until just now, yeah.
Okay, sure. The Sandworms, then.
Go with the Sandworm. Okay, Ammon, of all the characters in all these movies, who would win in a Battle Royale?
Although we don't see them fight, I think the Giants would win.
Oh, the Giants. They
They're
could
pretty
punch
big.
The Sandworms, yeah.
I think that they would. I think the Sandworms would try to eat them, and the Giants would just step over them.
Yeah, yeah. Wow, a lot of big things in these movies.
Mm. Yeah.
Okay.
It's time.
Yeah, Ammon, your third favorite movie of these.
I'm sorry, it's going to be different than everyone else's. I liked it, but it's Dune. I thought it was a good movie.
I think that's fair. I think I understand just because. I mean, it is. I mean, we have the 1984 Dune, and it's based on a book, and it doesn't diverge. So, I mean, ultimately, it has the curse of what's the word? You know, a copy of a copy, the degradation.
Yeah.
You know, whatever that happened. Yeah. Okay, Roy, third favorite.
So, this is also the third most popular on Rotten Tomatoes. Not, I didn't realize that until I ranked these, but I'm gonna go with Annette.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, so you didn't like it? Oh, okay.
It's my third favorite, or you can say it's my first least favorite. I don't know how you
Fair
want to
enough.
Say it.
Okay.
I honestly, I'm so conflicted. I really have no idea how to feel about Annette. I think it's pretty impressive that it's there,
mm-hmm.
and also part of me just like didn't really enjoy watching it, except for the drowning scene. but anyway.
The thing is, I think I feel the same way. I think one of the reasons I like Annette is because, I don't know, I respect it for making me hate it so much, in a way. But, you know, that's a really simple way to say it, because I didn't hate it. I didn't hate it at all. It's just like, it is one of those things where I'm just like, yeah, I don't know how to feel. I don't know what emotion to feel. I don't know what it's going for. And does that make it crappy or does it make it brilliant? I guess I'll still think about it a little bit. Nevertheless, it's my third favorite.
Yeah.
Okay, my second favorite, I'm going to go Dune, Roy.
I'm going Dune.
Okay, Ammon, your second favorite, that's where it all comes down. That's where we
so
feel all.
I'm going with Annette.
Yes, okay.
I liked Annette. I loved Annette.
Yeah.
But I thought Green Knight was one of the most amazing movies I've seen in I don't know how long.
Okay, yeah, cool. And I'm really glad you made me watch it. I kind of had... I feel like when it came out, a lot of people I respected said, I saw Green Knight and it was pretty good. And I kind of got a sense that they didn't really like it that much, that it didn't really grab them. And I'm like, oh, that's too bad. You know, I guess it's just boring and people didn't take to it. But I'm so glad you made me watch it because I think it was. I thought The Green Knight was really cool. And
yeah. I was one of those people.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, and I think you were, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, watching it a second time was really helpful, and I really enjoyed it this time around. I liked it a lot.
And I think why we're going to remember The Green Knight more than Dune is because The Green Knight had source material, but it was kind of like, okay. What are we going to say beyond the source material? How are we going to take that source material and say something else rather than just represent the source material?
I can't think of another movie that's like The Green Knight.
Hmm. Yeah.
You know? I mean, I'm sure there are other movies in different ways, but, like, it was its own kind of thing.
Yeah.
So the style was so great, right? Because, I mean, it had, like, the medieval feel, but it was also it was just the weirdest blend of modern filmmaking with the feel, right? And so it wasn't, like, slick and it wasn't polished, But I just thought, like, it felt right. It felt really well done.
And there were funny moments.
Like, amazingly. 500 feet naked giants.
Yeah, yeah. Count it. Okay, that's it. That's it. Awards, rankings, they're done. Future business.
All right. Well, so this is fascinating because up until 2 hours ago, I would have told you that we are about to watch Harold and Maude. Someone retracted a vote. I have no idea who.
Do you really not know who?
I don't. Was it you?
Yeah, it was.
Oh, well, good for you, I guess, huh? So, Ammon, we've talked about this eventuality before. Uh-huh. You're our guest host. There's a four-way tie between Harold and Maude, As Good As It Gets, Gaslight, and Shop Girl. So there's two ways to go about this, Ammon. The only one of those four movies you actually voted for was Shop Girl. But I would also think that maybe the proper way is to say, since you're coming back and you have to watch them, I would rather watch
Harold and Maude, to be honest. I thought I voted for that one too. So,
well, you didn't.
If you voted for it, then it definitely would have won.
Or to rephrase, I didn't think I voted. I thought I didn't vote for any of them because I didn't think I was supposed to. I do like Shop Girl. I think it's a good movie.
Okay, so I'll clarify. But, you're supposed to vote on everything, Ammon.
Ah, okay.
Lots
well,
of vote.
Let me then add a vote to Harold and Maude because I would like to watch that.
Okay. Well, all right. Okay, so last
changes.
Time... Yeah, nothing changes. Okay. Last time when we talked about this category, I think John brought up that we're probably going to have to watch something stupid like Sabrina. And Sabrina's a tempting movie for me, but when I watched Sabrina, I kind of hate it a little bit because Humphrey Bogart looks so unhappy. Like, he looks like he wishes he was in any other movie. And I've read that, like, he didn't enjoy acting with Audrey Hepburn. So it just shows.
How is that possible?
Bastard.
So yeah. What he said was like, yeah, it's because someone asked her, what do you think of working with Audrey Hepburn? He said, it's fine if you like 20 takes.
But 20 takes with Audrey Hepburn.
Yeah, so I would blow my lines to spend 40 takes with Audrey Hepburn, yeah.
I still love Audrey Hepburn, and an old counterpart of hers that looked like he was having a good time is Fred Astaire, so we'll do Funny Face.
Funny Face.
Oh, nice movie. Good choice.
Okay.
There's lots of problems with that movie, by the way. as far as, like... anyway, we'll talk about it. I love it. It's a fairly problematic film, aside from the fact that he's 30 years older than her.
Wow.
But anyway, Funny Face. I really love that movie. Go ahead, John. It's your pick.
Well, my plan didn't work, but alas...
What was your plan?
My plan, Ammon, was to take away my Harold and Maude vote and then have you... vote for Shop Girl.
Were you trying to help your girl out because she wanted Shop Girl?
Well, I've never it all worked out. It's like, whatever, I'm picking Shop Girl now. Yeah, because that's the one I was going to pick. I was going to pick Shop Girl.
I'm writing this down right now. Gaslight.
No, but if Ammon picked Shop Girl, then I probably would have picked Gaslight because I'm curious to see Gaslight. But no, we're watching Shop Girl. We're watching... the thing is, I do want to see Harold and Maude because I don't think I've ever seen it.
I've never seen it.
And...
it'll be fun then. I've never seen it either, so...
I mean, it's a classic. I mean, I wanted to definitely have at least one in there where the woman is older than the man.
Yeah.
So, that's what we're getting, so that's good.
So, Ammon, have you seen Gaslight, the old 1944 film?
I never have.
It's proof that there exists a movie out there where Angela Lansbury was an attractive younger woman. Because in every movie I've seen her in,
I completely believe that.
Yeah, she's already 70 in every movie that I've seen her in ever.
You know what, though? I think you can tell. I think I completely believe it.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, she looks like Angela Lansbury, though.
Yeah, but so like when I saw Gaslight, I think because I'm like churning through my list of like 200 movies that you got to watch, right, or whatever, right?
Yeah.
And I think Gaslight was on there. And by the way, like when you tell your friends they're gaslighting you, it's because this movie, right?
Right.
But like she's in it, I'm like, who is that? And because like the faint familiarity, I was like, oh my goodness, it's Angela Lansbury. But anyway, we're not watching it. So Harold and Maude, Funny Face, and Shop Girl, those will be fun.
It'll be good time. It'll be good time. Yeah, yeah. Okay, so I guess.
Oh, okay. More future business,
more
right?
More future business. Okay.
So there's no category for you guys to vote on, or at least for us to reveal that was a winner, because the next category is simply. Christmas 2021.
Yeah.
So we will put a poll out there, let you guys pick some movies, and we'll get that queued up for December. And I think we're going to give ourselves an extra little break before that podcast. So instead of doing it on, I think, December 2nd, we'll do it on the 9th because, one, I refuse to watch any Christmas movies until after Thanksgiving, and fair. That would have been a tight window. So, yeah. So there. And then after that, we do have categories we got to kind of settle on for January. Now, we're not sure if we're going to have a guest for the first podcast in January, so if we don't, then this is where we're going to go. But I put the call out there on the Facebook page. If you want a guest host with us, please do. We love it. We enjoy you guys bringing
They're
your
fun.
Free films. Yeah. It's, you can spend 4 hours with us talking about movies until I fall asleep, and that's cool, so we'll have a good time. But anyway, there's some of you who vote a lot.
Yeah.
But have never been with us on air, and we will make you so famous. So,
or if you're too famous, we'll make you less famous.
Yeah, true. It's anyway, if we get no, if we don't get any newbies volunteering, then I think John has a rule, right? Like, if you come on for a second time, you have to bring 3 movies you've never seen before, but you want to.
Yes. So, Ammon, let me just ask you, what do you think of that? So, if you were to join us in 2022 again, instead of bringing 3 new movies, like, it's 3 movies you'd never seen before.
That would be fun. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that's okay. Okay, our focus group checks out, right?
There we go.
I think it's good. I think we're going to pencil that in as the plan. So okay. Next time you join us, yeah, just...
All right, I'll remember that. 3 movies that I've never
3
seen.
3 movies you've never seen. And that applies to all future guests who've already been on the podcast before.
So in the meantime, if we fail to get a guest for the first podcast in January, we do have some categories to come up with.
Yeah.
So the first one is the random one.
Okay.
And this is... John, I told you something was going to happen, right?
Okay. Yeah.
It's number 21. It's Into the Wild movies. Movies about like an individual who, for whatever reason, goes into the wild. And the problem here is that this is now the third time this has been nominated.
Oh, so we have to do it.
So I'm not saying we have to do it. I'm just saying that when the voting happens, if this loses, then automatically we trigger the Losers Club.
Okay.
So which would be Into the Wild movies, what do we have, 50s musicals,
wow.
And what's the other category we haven't done? So. Anyway, no Losers Club, so that's about 10 minutes of me mumbling that you can edit out, and that's great.
Okay.
So... Point is, Ammon, you got to give us a category.
All right, here's my suggestion for a category. You don't have to call it this, but the Cassandra Conundrum.
Oh.
So movies where one of the characters gives a warning that is unheeded that should have been heeded.
Okay, that's good.
Can you think off the top of your head right now of 3 movies like that?
It doesn't have to be a major feature of the movie. So, for example, I had some earlier. Are you telling me it's too obscure of a category?
No, I would just... I'm trying to think.
Let me think.
Okay,
me,
so
I had some earlier.
Could do Troy, right?
Troy, sure. Yeah.
Which we're dying to watch.
I remember in...
Like a lot of horror movies, right? Like,
yeah.
Harbingers?
Oh, the Harbinger says, don't go here. Yeah.
Okay. Green Knight. What made me think of actually was the Green Knight.
The Green Knight would have worked, yeah.
Is the guy at the bridge, you know, in the Holy Grail, where he like asks him the questions? That's not quite the same, right? That's
Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Oh, let's not take the car.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that counts. Ferris Bueller's Day Off, and then okay, so they don't heed the counsel at the beginning, yeah. Because you love Cassandra, right? I get this, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. 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 Yeah, that's good.
Fascinating. Okay. So it's my pick, and I'm going to go ahead and pick good old number 79. Where are you? We've had this category for a little bit. We've never voted on it. It's called Hi-Ya, and it's artsy Chinese films.
Does that make that one 3 times? Is that what
you're
thinking?
That's only one for that one. That's the first time we've voted for this one.
Artsy Chinese. Okay, so, I mean, you realize there's going to be, you know, we're going to have to define artsy, or there's going to be... You know, there's going to be controversy about, like, if it's artsy or
not. Oh, you know what you guys can do? You can do the movie that I thought about doing but didn't do this time, which is In the Mood for Love.
Mood for Love, right.
My favorite artsy Chinese movie.
So if this movie actually wins, then I will just be a tyrannical person who like says yay or nay to every single suggestion, right?
So you're going to say Nita In the Mood for Love then?
No, I would allow it. So I originally thought, okay, artsy like martial arts films, because there was kind of that era in the late 90s, early 2000s where they did a bunch, right? Like but then I thought that would exclude Raise the Red Lantern, which I think
movie is something else, man.
Maybe we should say non-martial arts Chinese movies.
No, because I'm cool. I would enjoy watching Hero or The House of Flying Daggers. I think those would both
Will, but I mean I'm just saying, you know, for the purposes of defining things, maybe it's like, okay, maybe artsy means, hey, no hi-ya. Well, I guess that's the title of the category, so I guess we can't.
Yeah, it is. Right. And it's also, I think, like, that was the point of those martial arts films, where they were supposed to be, like, an elevated, like, form of that, right? Mm-hmm. And so it wasn't just, like, the 20th sequel to The Drunken Master. So, right. Plus, I don't know if you've seen Hero, but like Hero and House of Flying Daggers, they're just beautiful. Like, visually, those films are just gorgeous.
They are visually... I think I saw Hero, but not the Flying Daggers one. But, you know, one thing I will say, I mean, I kind of feel like Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon is way high above anything else I saw. Like,
yeah, it's in its own thing.
It's.
So that's the one that got all the attention. I think I like Hero better. I think Hero's maybe it's a little slower moving and a little more boring, but I just love how like it's kind of like is it Rashomon? Is that the one where it's like the different retellings of the same story? Yeah. And like every time he retells his story, there's a different color scheme, and I just think it's so cool.
All I know is Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon moved me, man. It moved me.
Yeah. Does Michelle Yeoh look the same age today as she did in that film?
No. She looks younger now.
That's probably true. anyway, that's what we got. So we're either going to watch like Grizzly Adams movies or Franco when he gets his arm stuck in the boulder. Something like that, right? Yeah. Or we'll watch the Cassandra Conundrum films, or we're going to watch artsy Chinese films. So you guys will vote, and that'll happen in January, sometime in January.
Okay, yeah, that's a long ways away. So, but, you know, it's not too early to vote. Okay, Roy, it's 20 minutes until you said you were planning to go to bed, so that's good. So I'll wrap this up.
Yeah, we got 20 minutes to fill.
Yeah. Okay, before I forget... We have a phone number, 801-896-4542, 801-896-4542. Call that number, and now's a really good number to call because I think we're also going to want to get your voicemails regarding your favorite movie or your least favorite movie or your favorite discovery or your favorite whatever pertaining to one of the movies we watched in the year 2021 on this podcast. You know, so if you listened at all, just let us know your favorite, least favorite, or whatever. Anything you want to tell us, just some moment you remember, you know, from like a movie from the podcast or from the podcast itself. That would be great because, you know, we'll play it on our year-end episode, so it'll be fun. So, Ammon, just call us right after this recording.
All right, I'll just call right after this.
Yeah, do that.
I'm definitely not expecting to bed.
Yeah. okay, other than that, we have our email... Yours, mine, theirs, podcast at gmail.com. Email us. We will read your email on the air. Complain about us directly, and we can do that. Also, complain about us directly on iTunes, but give us 5 stars. And I think it's called Apple Podcasts now, but go to Apple Podcasts, go to iTunes, go to your podcast server, give us a rating of 5 stars. Do that. If you've listened this far, then it's the least you can do. If you're not,
least you
know,
can do.
Yeah, if you're not asleep while it's still playing in your iPod. go to the blog, yours, mine, theirs, podcast.blogspot.com. You can do direct MP3 downloads of everything we've ever done. We've done, I think, 73 other podcasts, and you can get them all there directly. On Letterboxd, I am Rex Bassior. Roy is ValNJR1. And we have lists of all our ratings and links to everything on our letterbox pages. So, Ammon, we didn't let's see. Do you wanna pimp some of your stuff out? Do you have any?
I'm between podcasts right now, so I'm not. But I'm hoping to have some articles coming out soon in more popular style magazines, but nothing to pimp yet. So
okay,
when I do, I'll run over. So
if you have any links to anything, send me those links in the next 24 hours, and we'll put them in the show notes.
Cool. All right.
And I know you're on some episodes of the Hotel Bar.
Yeah, I'm on the first 15 episodes of that. So. Yeah. If this 3 hours was not enough, there's 15 more hours of me there. I also, Black Mirror Reflections, I did an episode on Hated in the Nation and National Anthem for all you Black Mirror fans out there.
I didn't know that.
You can learn what I think about a prime minister having to have relations with a pig on air.
I want to know that. Yeah.
I'll send you the link to it later, John.
No, that would be great. No, I'll go listen to that. Yeah. I'm a big Black Mirror fan, so that'll be cool.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, you'd enjoy the podcast anyway, then. It's a good podcast. So.
Okay. No, I'll check that out. Okay. Right. In the meantime, Ammon, you're done. Roy, you're asleep?
Yep. Yes. I'm now asleep.
Okay. All right. That's it for us. Goodbye, everybody. Goodbye. We'll see you in 2 weeks.
See you guys. I will talk to you more tomorrow. I'm pretty wiped out too, so I'm gonna just hang up. But this was really fun.
Sure, it was fun. Sorry it went so long, but you have no one but yourselves to blame.
Yeah, no, it's my fault. So, yeah.